Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 7th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, before we get started, we're going to read from the scriptures. We're going to read tonight in the Gospel of John. So the scripture reading is going to be on John chapter 10, verses 1 through 21. John chapter 10, verses 1 through 21. All right, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as is a thief or a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him. They know not the voice of a stranger." This parable spake Jesus to unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then said, Jen, can you mute yourself there? Then said Jesus unto them again, "Truly, truly, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out, and shall find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for his sheep. But he that is a hireling and not a shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is a hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doeth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh from me, but I lay it down myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it again. This commandment have I received from my Father." There was a division, therefore, amongst the Jews for these sayings. And many of them say, "He hath a devil and is mad. Why hear ye him?" Others said, "These are not the words of him that hath a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of a blind?" And I know last time we were together, I believe we read the story about the blind man that Jesus had healed right before this area of parables. Okay, anyway, that was the Gospel of John, chapter 10. We read verses 1 through 21. Okay, I guess before we get started into anything, we'll take that question. The question that came up is a very important question. So let me unmute, I think it was Nina that was asking that question. So let's take Nina. Nina, you've been unmuted. You could talk. What was your question?
Yeah, My name is Nina. We've all been waiting for these tribunals and everything for so long, and when do you think that we might be needed as grand jury administrators?
Well, look, hopefully very soon. I've been ill for a while, so I've been out of the loop for about a month, and I really haven't got much accomplished over the past month, so I got a lot of catching up to do, and others do too. And we're going to have a meeting, matter of fact, this Wednesday. I'll announce this a few times tonight, maybe. But we're going to have a meeting this Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room, in order to organize exactly what we're talking about right now, and that is taking back the control of our nation. We've heard, I heard tonight, as a matter of fact, on, what was his name, Kublik? David Kublik, I believe his name is. He's a pretty good source of information. And he did talk today that he's got some special connections, and some other people also have some good connections into what's really going on. He's got word that the tribunals have started. They started on, I believe he said it was January 2nd. So anyone who hasn't seen that, you might want to go take a look and listen to his whole, program on YouTube. You can also find him. I believe we have him up. I'm not sure whether we have him up on our news page, but if not, you can go to YouTube and look for David Kubelik. Do you know how to spell that, Jan? I think you listen.
Well, I can look it up in your Skype, Ben. And I can't either.
I think it's Kublick.
Okay, so you're...
That sounds right.
Yep. All right. Go check him out, because he's going to tell you on that side of things. Now, here's the other side of things, and this is where it's time for we here at National Liberty Alliance to really get active. And that's what this meeting is going to be about on Wednesday. We're really looking to energize everyone and get them going. You know, look, obviously President Trump is not able to save this nation on his own. He's got a lot of help, and it's a lot of inside help, a lot of military help, and others from various parts of our government. And there's a lot of the government that's against him. The deep state is working overtime, and, of course, the news media is working overtime to destroy him and try to prevent him from doing what he's planning on doing, which is to return this nation back to we the people. We will be filing a lawsuit, and we've been talking about this for a while. I kind of hope to have done this before Christmas, or at least over the Christmas holidays, get everything together on this, but... Again, I've been kind of out of the loop for almost a month now, but I'm back in, and we're back on it. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'd like to say a couple of weeks, maybe sooner, maybe one more, but we will have those papers ready to file our lawsuit against the judiciary, which is a very important lawsuit because it's going to make the case clear, and we're going to copy all three branches of government on this, but the lawsuit will be against the judiciary, the federal judiciary, and also the United States Supreme Court. At least that's our plan at this point. The United States Supreme Court, if we can kind of keep them out of this lawsuit, I think it would be much more important and let them sit as the jurist, really, because I think we have enough people there in this court that they would be able to uphold the Constitution. And we're going to make it clear in our paperwork on how they have stole the courts of record, which is courts of justice, which is courts of common law, courts of natural law, whichever one of those phrases you want to use, they're all the same. But they've robbed us of our natural law courts, totally gone. The only thing we have is equity courts, and then these phony, courts that appear to be run by the people, but actually are really run behind the scenes psychologically and. By either the prosecutor on the one side of the grand jury and the judge on the other inside, as far as the trial juries are concerned. And so we want to reveal this. We have read and studied, and we've got this in our course. We've spoken about this many times. We'll speak some more. We're trying to get out to as many places as possible to get the word out that the people need to step up to save this nation. Trump can only do so much. He can only bring things back to where it should be, but it's up to the people to take control. When our nation was founded, as we read in the Declaration of Independence, we have government by the consent of those people. And the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to teach the people what that consent is and how to grab hold of that consent so that we can take control of our government, literally take control of our government. And we do that through being empowered by common law grand juries, unadulterated by any of the judiciary process, disconnected from the whole process, but under the auspices of the judiciary, or shall I say the courts. But we are at hand's length, which are meant to be at hand's length, or arm's length, I think is the phrase. We're at arm's length, which means we're not to be controlled by anyone. The people need to take 100% control of the judicial process. And if we fail to do it, then we just don't want liberty. We don't want what our founding fathers put together and gave their lives, their fortunes, their lives for. You know, the question is, are we going to do it? Are we going to step up and take control and take back the authority that the people rightly should have? The other side of that coin is the political side through what's called the committeemen. And we don't teach too much about that. We do teach it. There's a lot of stuff on our website concerning the committeemen. You'll find in our course, Government by Consent, that everyone should be taken. But in that course, Government by Consent, you will have a lot of things on the committeemen. And once we get over the hump, so to speak, and start to get the administrators, which are the people, back into control of the courts and start moving that across the nation, we're going to be pushing a lot of information and a lot of training and encouraging of people to take control of the political process through what's called the committeeman process. And so we the people can control 100% of our government by the committeemen and by the grand juries and the trial juries. The committeemen control and they're the people, and they have been seized control of 50 years, maybe longer, but probably most of our lives, they have been taken control of by the powers that be. You know, it's a top-down structure when it should be a bottom-up structure. And so we want to reveal this and show the people how they can get back into this and take control of this. Once we take control of the committeemen process, and when I say we, I mean we the people across the United States in every single county. My county, for instance, has, I believe it's 249 committeemen. That which controls all of the towns and the cities in my county. My county has two cities, which is Dutchess County, and I believe we have 19 towns. So we have 21 political subdivisions, two cities, and 19 towns. And then, of course, you got the villages. And there are 249 individuals who are committeemen who take control of that process to decide who they're going to help or assist to get onto the ballot. And that, of course, has been under the control of the deep state or the powers that be, or the elite, whatever name you want to give them. Okay, that has been under the control of others other than the people for a long time. So our choices have been the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. That's it. That's your choice. Every once in a while, a good person gets in, but that's kind of rare. So we do want to teach people how to do that. Everyone should be a committeeman once in their lifetime. It's a two-year process. It probably takes up about maybe 30, 40 hours a year at most, if that much. But let's say 40 hours a year. Usually it's always in the evenings. Usually it's a meeting maybe once every month or once every 2 months. If that often. The real activities take place during the time when the votes are going on, when the election times, primaries and the general election. Then we're the people who, what we do is, as committeemen, we walk the ballots. We walk the papers for those people who want to get onto the ballot. But we get to interview those people. Instead of putting the criminals up there, we want to put constitutionalists up there. And that's what the committeemen does. They're to choose statesmen, people who know the Constitution, who honor the Constitution. If they don't know it, you know, we can send them to National Liberty Alliance to learn it, and then they can come and then we'll quiz them and see if they really do know the Constitution. After all, they're going to raise their hand and swear to uphold and protect it, so they should know it before they raise their hand to know and protect it. And then we can hold them accountable. So the committeeman excuse me, the committee man gets to get to interview these people. And that might be a few nights over the course of a couple of weeks, you know, a couple hours a night here or there during the time when people want to run for office. So right before that, as the primaries are coming up, that's when people will be coming to the committeemen. They go to the committeemen. The committeemen have a lot of power. And believe me, when the chair calls up one of these individuals to speak to them, whether they're elected or not, and they want to run for office, and especially if they are in office, if they make the call and say, hey, I want to talk with you, I'll see you on Thursday at a certain time or Wednesday at a certain time, and they're going to be there. Or they're going to answer the phone, and they're going to respond. Why? Because that's the person that gets them into office, gets them on the ballot to get into office. Let's put it that way. Gets them onto the ballot. If they upset those individuals, they're not going to get onto the ballot. And it's very important. It's a very powerful, powerful position. People need to understand it, and they've lost control of it. They don't have control. There are no elected committeemen that I'm aware of anywhere in the United States. I can assure you that there's no elected committeemen in Pennsylvania, there's no elected committeeman in New York, none in New Jersey, nor in Connecticut. And I know we looked at some other states, and I don't remember. We have not found. We've had people come. We've looked at the information they have in order to become committeemen. They're not elected committeemen. So they're what's called strawmen. They're just the front people to make it look like we're free, to make it look. And they're also the cattle that takes forward the workload to go out and get enough signatures in order to bring these people to get them onto the ballot. So that we, the people, are being used as the committeemen, the existing committeemen today. So we need to bring that back. We need to get it back to the people, get it back to the grassroots, let the people decide, let the people interview the people that are running for election that affect their particular political subdivision. And whether they're running for a village position, a town position, a state position, a county position, or a federal position, it doesn't matter. Any position they're running for, if it affects that political subdivision that you live in, then you get the opportunity as a group within each town and each and throughout the county to decide who we're going to run and who we're going to put onto the ballot. And it all has to do, and it should have to do, with their qualifications to run for office and be a statesman. That's what it should be. And if we do that, then we'll have good people in power and not the criminals. The other thing is if, and here is more power of the committeemen. If individuals start to take that funny money, because that's a bribe, who are these people that are going to go take money from these special interest groups and vote their way and not the way of the people? They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. We will make it clear, or we should make it clear to them, and it's the people that need to make it clear to them. Don't take that funny money, because we find out if you take that funny money, we're pulling you out of office. And the committeeman is that powerful to be able to take people out of office. Just think about that. The committeemen are powerful enough. Believe it. Well, no, I couldn't take the president out because the president's elected by the states. But you definitely can take your senators out, which you shouldn't be able to. That should be controlled by the states also. You definitely can take out your congressmen. You can take out your mayors. You can take any other elected individual. Okay? So that's how powerful the committeeman is. Now, how does a committeeman remove a person from office? And it's pretty simple, actually. If you get enough of a group of people, which are the committeemen, together, and to bring a meeting to say, hey, we got a problem with this congressman that we've walked the papers for and got elected, and he's not obeying the Constitution, or he's taking that funny money and he's not voting the will of the people but the will of those who are giving him money. And so that position or argument could be made to the other committeemen. We can get an agreement going and say, okay, let's pull him from office. And it's called recall. And any state, any place, any committeeman group can exercise their right of recall. There can be no law against that. You don't need no law to go forward with that. It's just an unalienable right, the power and the authority of the committeeman. So the committeeman will go out, and you go into the election laws, it'll tell you exactly, how many votes are needed, a percentage of voters are needed in order to pull people out of office as far as what's called recall. So if a person was elected by a certain amount of votes, okay, Well, then you have to have a certain percentage of those votes in signatures within the election districts that are affecting that particular congressman, or if it's a mayor in a town or some other state legislator or whatever the case may be. Okay, you can then you carry enough signatures and you bring it in and you do a recall and you pull that person out of office and bring back a special election for that position. And that's how that's power. That's power. And again, you know, we're looking, it's a volunteered position, but it is an elected position. It's a position of authority and power. And again, it's a 2-year, you go in for 2 years. You can serve as many years as you want, but it's a 2-year term. Everyone, during your life, everyone should at least one time run for a committeeman and pick up, you know, the weight there and work whatever they got to work and then pass that on to the next person after 2 years. And again, we're only talking 30, 40 hours a year, which most of that time is around the election. Committeemen are supposed to be at the election districts, okay? Every election district has a committeeman. And that committeeman should be at that election district observing the election, making sure things run accordingly. Votes should be counted in the open, literally, you know, by ballot, not by computer, not in hidden. It must be done in the open. There's a process for that, and that's already written down on how that process goes. And they're not doing it because they got computers. They want to steal the elections. But nevertheless, we can bring those things back. We can demand it and require it. And we observe. There are also other observers there at when the counting of the vote takes place, but the committeeman needs to be there. And then they can certify also that the vote for this particular election district for whatever election subdivisions were being run for have been properly accounted for and certified. And until we do that, until we take this power over, we'll never have control of our political power, and we'll always have criminals, and we'll always just return back to where we left. If we, the people, don't get up and take care of their business of consent of our government by doing these three processes, again, one, of course, we're talking about right now is the committeeman. If we don't get together and take care of business to do our duty as the people, as the citizens, to say, okay, look it, I will run for as a committeeman once in my life. Maybe I can't do it now. Maybe I could do it 5 years from now. Maybe I could do it next year. Whatever. Just find the time to do it once. And more if possible, if you want. But always give the other person, other people, if you got enough people and want to run for those positions. The other thing, of course, is when you're called for the jury and the grand jury to respond to that. But we need to take control of that also. This is the two points of power, political and judicial. The political through the committeeman, the judicial through the administrators. That would be the jury administrators, the grand jury and trial jury administrators. They would be the people that orientate the people as they come in to become jurists. They get 8 hours, you know, they get 1 day, 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is, to orientate them. And it doesn't take much to orientate them. But we can orientate them to in empowering them, to let them know that they have the power of jury nullification. If they try to bring certain statutes, or maybe it's a process where statutes are part of the process, because that exists, by the way. Some people don't realize that, but they do. And so then you got to rule on a statute. Well, if you don't like it, the people in the jury, the trial jury, don't like that statute, they can just nullify it. We don't like that. And not find the person guilty of that. But those are very special circumstances, because that would be something falling under the titles, the U.S. titles, which are 56 U.S. titles. But what we're more interested in is the law. You got equity and the law, and that's the court systems we have. The equities run under statutes, titles 1 through 57, I have 56, and the law runs under natural law, which is the law of the heart. We sit down, listen, and decide on whether there's enough evidence. First of all, whether there was a crime, okay? Everybody knows a wrong. You know, when someone's been wronged, you know whether that they've been wronged or not. Yeah, that this person done this person wrong. Well, the question is how do we fix the person who has been injured? That's the question. Not how long do we put them in jail for. How do we fix the person that is injured? And if necessary, how do we control the person if they're violent? There's different ways to deal with these kind of things, and we can discuss them at later times. But that's the decisions of the jury. They need to listen to the stories. They need to say, yeah, an injury definitely has taken place, or whether it's a crime or whatever, you know, someone stole something or injured somebody, something. Then the next decision they need to make, well, what are we going to do to repair this person? Okay, what is a proper judgment? You know, how are we going to restore the injured person? And so that's the next thing that they have to decide. And if there needs to be jail time, which should be very, very minimum and rare, you know, murder, extremely violent people, things of that nature, of course, we have to look at different things for that. But generally speaking, the concern should be restoring the individual. And by restoring the individual, there's a high likelihood you're going to restore the perpetrator. You're going to be restoring the individual who violated that individual, hopefully to make them see their wrongs. And also, of course, they have to pay their debt. And between those two points that should be instilled in them, it hopefully will prevent them from doing something like that again. So anyway, the jury, as far as a trial jury, extremely important. The judge gets to decide zip, nothing, nada. The judge doesn't get the opportunity to open his or her mouth up to say, well, if you find that they violated this or they violated that, you got to do that. No, don't mean nothing. Ignore the judge. They cannot do it. That's tainting the jury. That's a crime. Okay, and the jury should bring that to the attention of the administrator, or if they know the grand jury is coming together to meet, to bring it to the grand jury. Say, I was in the courtroom, and this judge did this, that, or the other thing. Let them deal with it. But it should be addressed and dealt with. Okay, now the other thing is the grand jury. The grand jury gets to indict. They get to decide whether a crime has been taken or not. Most of the crimes that 80%, maybe even 90%, I'll say 80%, 80% of the crimes that have taken place across our nation are not crimes at all. Okay, they're code violations. And people are being incarcerated, fined, injured, and all kinds of damage is done to them by a government. And you cannot incarcerate a person without first bringing them before the grand jury. So they have to bring the person or the crime to the feet of the grand jury and ask. That means the prosecutor. Well, anyone could do this, actually, but the prosecutor is where most of the abuse is. They come to the grand jury. This person did this, that, or the other thing. I'd like to get an indictment. Well, an educated jurist, grand jurist, someone who really that we've given, you know, 6 to 8 hours is more than enough time to enlighten an individual on what their job is all about and what a crime is and what a crime isn't. And so that grand jurist, those grand jurists could say, no, we're not going to give you an indictment. Now, I don't know if I'm still here. Jan, am I still here? Because I lost my page here.
You've been kind of dropping in and out on my system, but you're here right now.
Okay, it looks like I'm reconnecting. Maybe, yeah, I reconnected back in now. Okay, anyway, we'll continue on. So the grand jurist gets to decide on whether they're going to indict or not. And that's where the education comes in. Look, we have this course, Government by Consent, okay? This course is going to cover everything that anyone should understand and know on how to give consent to your government. It's going to cover the necessary knowledge you want to understand what the law is, what are lawful laws, what are titles, which are codes, what are rules, what are regulations, by what authority, who are they applied upon. If we don't know that, we're just going to be sheep beat up, constantly brought to the slaughter, constantly, because we don't know the law. We don't know what we can do and what we can't do, what we should do and what we shouldn't. We just don't know anything. So an education is a requirement. Jefferson said, you know, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. They expect what never was and never will be. It's you're not going to have liberty. Most people don't even know what liberty is. They can't define it, okay? And they think they can. They think they know what it is, but they really don't. And it's alarming. I mean, I speak to myself first. until I really did all this research myself. I was blown away to understand what liberty truly is, okay? But in any event, the grand jurists make these decisions. And the grand jury has the power and the authority to indict people in office, okay? Of course, a president cannot be indicted while he's in office, but I think that's the only office that cannot be indicted while they're in office. Anyone else can. And so... You know, if people are taking that funny money and the grand jury can look at that and see that happening and get a hold of that person and set them straight, of course, first the administrators, and this would be the job of the administrators, we're looking for 4 administrators for every county across America. And that will be about 15,000 people, roughly speaking. There's 3,132 or 33 counties. We need 4 administrators for every county. There are some counties that are really very isolated. It isn't even a court area. How many people living in there? But there's no federal courts in certain areas here or there, or county state courts or anything. So it'll be less than that many counties. But you know, you take counties like New York City. It has 5 counties. They're called boroughs down there, but they're also still called counties. They have a large population, so it's going to be more than 4 administrators in those particular counties. It might require 6 or 8 or 12. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out as we go. But generally speaking, most counties would be able to get away with 4. Minimum is 4. And there's a reason for that. We discussed that in our teaching here on National Liberty Alliance. You read our papers, you study, you read the book, you take the course. And we will be teaching people also who are being orientated to become jurists. There's certain things they need to know, and that would be some of that. But anyway, when you got about 15,000 positions. Right now, we have, right now, let's see, we've got 1,046 people who have put their name up to become administrators in their counties. And it's a job, you know. It's a full-time job with a, you know, paycheck and it's a career, and it'd be a rewarding job and a well-paid job. But also, if you can't get a you know, all the positions in your county is taken, you work in the county next door, or maybe county next door's court is closer to you than in your own court, your own county. You can work in the other county. It doesn't matter. Where you work, because again, it's a job as far as being an administrator. But the administrators is the investigative body for the grand jury. The administrators is the doorway, the access point for the people to come and talk to the grand jury. I've known lots of people, and I've seen a few of them go to jail because they tried to get in to see the grand jury. You can't. It's near impossible. You can get to see the Pope probably easier than to go see the grand jury. I mean, that's how bad it is. We know one lieutenant colonel. I think he was a lieutenant colonel, if I recall. It was a while ago. We were trying to help him. And he spent 2 years trying to see the grand jury. And finally, they arrested him, and they tried him for stalking. They said he was stalking the grand jury. That's how bad it is. No, people need access to the grand jury. If they want to go tell a story to the grand jury because they've been injured and they want to be restored by some criminal or act or by some negligent situation, then they should have access to the grand jury to ask. So the first place they would start is they would hit the administrator. Let's say they're having a problem with a bureaucrat. You know, they can't get something that should be freely given to people. We have free access to everything in our country, in our government, with the exception of those things that might be marked secret, and they abuse a lot there, of course. But nevertheless, on the other end of things, they love to hold things back and give people a hard time and hold them off for months and even years sometimes before they release the information. That should not be. So if you have a problem with a bureaucrat, you can go down, get access, talk to the administrators. Now, the administrators, who is the investigative body for the grand jury and also empowers the grand jury to be their own investigative body, of course. Usually the whole grand jury doesn't go out to investigate. Usually it's 4 individuals. It could be, it's at least 2, but 4 individuals, I think, is the key. And They can go into any government office, get access, look into their computers, look into their drawers in their desk, look at the papers, ask questions, whatever they want. We're the boss. And that's the power and the authority of the jury, the grand jury, and the administrators for the grand jury. But anybody who is bringing a crime to the grand jury and brings it to the administrators could empower them as also individuals working for the grand jury for the purpose of investigating to give help to give them access to other places that they were looking to try to get access to gather more information and evidence so that they can bring and portray it to the grand jury just like a prosecutor would. That's how the system is supposed to be. You should be able to bring these problems directly to the grand jury, and they should be able to solve all of these criminal activities going on, or wrongful acts and deeds and so on. So anyway, you know, if a person, going back to where I was, a person has a problem with a bureaucrat, they try to get it to see the grand jury. First, the administrators would try to fix the problem, which would be part of their job, and make a few phone calls and say, why are you refusing these people access? Put the pressure on them and fix the problem. Usually should be able to fix the problem on the phone. And if that doesn't solve the problem, it could be brought before the grand jury. The grand jury can get a team of four out of them, go out and get access to the office and find out what the heck's going on here and fix the problem. And if they refuse then they bring it before the whole grand jury and ask for an indictment. And then you bring them into court and you force them. And, you know, this is the power and the authority of the people. This is government by consent. If you have an honest jurist, grand jurist, or free grand jury, let's put it that way, free grand jury, and an honest group of people, organization, I don't know what we would call it in the case of administrators, you know, feeding them proper information and making sure that they're free and not abused, okay, then you'll have an honest government. If people, again, a grand jury can make the phone calls or visit an elected official that's doing something wrong and they need to stop, they refuse to do it, they can bring it before the whole and get an indictment, and pow, you just remove that person from office once they get under indictment, pulled in before the courts. So we can remove people from office through the grand jury. You can remove people from office through, of course, the committeeman process, which would be the most favorable way to do it. The administrators and for the grand jury and the committeemen for that county should have a close relationship and understand the powers and the authorities of each other and work together in things like this. So, you know, you can do both. You can seek an indictment and the committeemen can pursue the removal from office, but the process will remove them from office if they're indicted on a crime. So therein is the power. And so it gets right back into our courts. Let's put it that way. If we have honest courts, then we will have an honorable country. If we do not have honest courts, we cannot possibly have an honorable country. And that's why all the evil that the deep state has been doing, you know, undercover, behind the scenes, behind our backs, us not knowing, because they control the media and everything, well, all of that evil that they're doing in our name, and they've been getting away with it, because we're too ignorant to know. And maybe we're too lazy, you know. I talk to people all the time. They think what we're doing is good, and yeah, but then they don't participate. Why? You know, the furthest they go is tweeting. I guess that they don't want to. You know, we don't read books no more. And I speak to myself first on all these things. Of course, I've changed the way I live my life and think, and I read and I study and so on and so forth. But I was ignorant to all these things, just like anyone else. Everyone needs to step up to take back control of our nation. And so that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We are here for the sole purpose of informing, educating, and bringing a place together where people can organize, communicate, educate, and then go out and take control of their country, of their nation, of their state, of their town, of their city, of their county, whatever, okay, locally, which is where it should be. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for you, and you better obey it or we're going to remove you from office. And until the government fears the people, and that's the only way they'll fear the people, they can fear the people no other way. Indictment and removal from office or rejection to be brought into office. And that's when they'll fear us. When we have that power, that authority, and we exercise it, that's when we will have government by consent. That's when we will have honest government. That's when we will be truly America, and we will truly be the light of the world to bring forth that which is truth and right. And we will have honest courts, just courts. We can have those things. We can have those things, but only if the people step up. And we've also created a plan to prevent corruption from within the four administrators. We have a plan to prevent that, or a plan to prevent the overtake of those things. And again, you know, we got all these people working overtime, putting their lives on the line, starting off with President Trump, a lot of military personnel, a lot of other people around President Trump, other politicians, individuals working behind the scenes, senators and congressmen, people in the state government, legislators, governors, others who are stepping up, putting their lives on the line to work with Trump and the military to take this nation back and to bring it back to justice. And all this work, when they're done and the day and it's all over, if we the people don't step up to take the controls now, then it's all for naught. And then we deserve whatever we get, because we don't care to take control by consenting to our government. So anyway, that's what we here at National Liberty is all about. This is the message we need to get out. Now is the time to step up, because we're getting ready. You know, we see the trials are starting. And for those, we brought it up a little earlier. I know we got a few new people here since then. You know, the trials are starting. What do they call it? The military tribunals. And the other trials will be starting not far behind that. And they may already be starting already. But in any event, that's going on. All of this stuff is going to be cleaned up, Lord willing, and opportunity to have a just nation will be there. The question is, do you want a just nation? What are you going to do? That's the question. And you know what? If your time is that much at this point in your life that you can't do anything to assist, there are a couple of things you can do. You can educate and support those who are doing what they can to try to bring this country back to where it belongs and takes control and give it back to the people. But if we don't take control of these things and control the consent of government, control to make sure that we have liberty, then we don't deserve liberty. And by the way, liberty is freedom from all law. Government can make no law upon me concerning my behavior. That's what liberty is. It's hard to swallow sometimes, but that's what it is. You know, Benjamin Franklin, and I think there's a few others. I think this quote has been worked around a few of our founding fathers, said that this is for a godly, I forget how, a morally minded or a godly people. It can work for none other. Okay, if we're not morally minded, and Americans by, you know, because of our, we're inherited that, even though we haven't heard it, and we haven't educated ourselves enough, and we've been, you know, deprived of a proper education by design. Okay, even though all that, we used to be educated, we used to know, our forefathers knew, our grandparents knew, our great-grandparents knew. And the actions of people are different, okay, in America than any other nation. We are more compassionate than any other nation. Why? Because we do have that moral fiber that is inside of us because of just through our environment, okay? Because we were a godly nation, a godly people. And we have a lot of that still in us. And, you know, we may not realize it, and we may not consciously think it out, but it's just by our actions. But they've been training people to be immoral. Just look at Hollywood. Training people to be But in any event, they're training people not to be compassionate. You know, you go watch a video and you see someone's body totally mutilated. I can't, who could sit and watch something like that? But they are training our children. And maybe, you know, our younger generation, 30s, 20s, maybe they're already a lot of, well, you can go back 30 years, 40 years, and, you know, they started to move these crazy movies in and different things. And people get used to seeing horrific things, okay? You know, that's the image of God. Another individual is the image of God. When you injure another individual, you are injuring God. You've done it unto him, you've done it unto me, the Lord said. So, you know, we are not that way by the environment, okay? And again, that brings us back to morality and religious beliefs, beliefs in God, and morality. And but we are losing that. That's another part of our problem that we have. We better fix. And this is why there's a big problem with people coming into this nation also illegally, because they're bringing in things different than what we are as a people. You know, the people doing it properly, also there's a requirement in order to become a citizen and to take tests. And, you know, I've seen some of those tests. They look pretty good, but we need to review that and make sure that they are right. But in any event, it does seem that those people who have come in legally and have gone through the process and become citizens know more about our nation and how the government works and this process than we who are born here. And that's pretty horrible. Okay, so anyway, that's it in a nutshell. I wanted to take that question. Do you have any final comments, Nina, before I move on with the rest of the program?
No, that was an excellent discussion, and it sounds very exciting to me. But I would agree with what you said about immigrants. They appreciate our freedom a whole lot more than we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yep. But that was an excellent talk. I'm going to have to go back over it again. It's all being recorded. But,
we have the record up there. You can go up and download the MP3 at the end of the evening. Usually Jan gets it up right after the program or tomorrow morning. Also, we have our course, Government by Consent, which will cover a heck of a lot more than I talked about.
Right.
I just gave sort of an overview. And we also, of course, the website, reading through, we have a higher education here on our website. We have deeper education going into the sciences. We got so much here, political, judicial, and of course, even scientific. And we, the people, need to understand and know these things. You know, the reality we think that the media, and I think most of the people that are members of the National Liberty Alliance and many people who are in that Liberty Group movement, they kind of know, or they're prepared to accept the idea that just about everything that our government is feeding us is a lie. Just about everything. Our whole world is built upon lies, hidden things. There's so many things going on. And who are these people that have seized control? Well, they're being tried right now. Some of them are out there going under military tribunals. And this is not just coming through America. This is going to move worldwide, because once America takes these SOBs down, okay, that's where the real stronghold is. It has been America hasn't been totally conquered yet, and that's why they haven't been able to pull in their New World Order reins. But now they're going down, and that is becoming a domino effect around the world. Russia, China, all these nations. I don't know so much about China, but China, I think, will eventually come along anyway, if they aren't already. I think they are, because they have the same problem at a lesser degree. Russia has the huge problem just like us. They have a deep state problem, serious problem just like us. I think we have the most serious problem, because this is where the heart of evil is. It comes right out of America. And that's a shame. You know, even God told us, you know, if you want to find Satan, go to church ultimately, because he's going to seek the high places. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness that are in the high places. And it's kind of a paraphrase. I know there was another few more words in there. But in any event, evil will always go where the power is and try to deceive and take control. It's a constant. So.
Yes. Well, evil goes towards goodness.
And to take it over. Yep.
Yeah.
And to abuse.
I think China will come around, too.
There's no doubt. They will eventually come around. I think they're already in the game. I do. I think they're already in the game.
Well, this is very exciting. It's a very exciting time to be alive. But there's
That's
so
true.
Much going on behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that talk that you gave. It was excellent.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to mute you back, and if you want to get back into the queue, you can get back into the queue. Hang on a second. I think I'm muted. Can you still talk? Did I mute you? No, I got you muted. Okay. All right, we're going to go back into I kind of veered off our normal process of coming into the call because I did want to cover that right up front. That was a very important question, and it also ties into what we're preparing to do right now. Now is the time to act. And that whole conversation or one-way conversation, monologue, whatever you want to call it, I don't know. But all the things I just spoke about, we need to get the word out. That's the word that needs to get out. We need to wake up people. And we will be organizing Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be meeting this week. So what's today? The 7th. That'll be the 9th. Wednesday the 9th, January 9th, at 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this conference call room, we will have a meeting. We will try to keep it as short as possible. Purpose is really to organize and really start to become active and to kind of wake up those of us who have fallen asleep over the years. We've got a lot of memberships, a lot of leaders, or people who have taken leadership roles. We need to kind of wake them up and get them going and take control. It's time for the people to step up. This is it. Now is the time. Okay, we're going forward with lawsuit against the judiciary for stealing our courts of record or natural law courts from the people. We're going to make it clear on the paper. I was just working on something over the weekend. And collected a lot of information concerning the problem with the Senate. And the thing that made me think about these things is listening to Trump talk about the 60-vote requirement in order to pass something through the Senate, with few exceptions. And that clearly is unlawful. They have no power, no authority to make a rule like that. So we want to do a information to the Senate concerning that problem, copy the United States Supreme Court, maybe try to frame the question as, what are you going to do about it now? And also copy President Trump and maybe suggest to him, look at if you get a 51-49 vote, you got it. Take it and run with it. Of course, it's a battle with the Senate, I guess, for the paperwork. I don't know how that would work out. I don't have enough of education in that area to know how that process is. But the pressure has got to be put on these people. They do not have the power, the authority to change the balance of power. I was looking into this and researching, doing a lot of reading and studying and looking into the Federalist Papers particularly. I haven't got to the Anti-Federalist Papers yet on this issue, but I did get into the Federalist Papers concerning the Senate and the balance of power and how it was put together, the difference between being federal or national. And ultimately, United States, we are both. And that's very important. We are both. We're federal, which would be, what's the word for that other than federal or federalist? It would be, if I think of it, I'll bring it up. But anyway, we are federalist and we are nationalist. This nation is controlled by both the states and the people. And the states can negate the people, and the people can negate the states. Hey, that's a great balance of power, I heard I think it was a senator, it could have been a congressman, but I think it was a senator recently, talked about trying to, and this move has happened numerous times, to try to get rid of the way that we vote for a president. The process that we vote by the president, if you really look at it, it is the states that elect the president. That's what, and it's very important that does not change. Okay. Now, it is true that the states will go along with the popular vote within the state, so there's an agreement there. There's a working relationship there, and that's great. President Trump could have lost this election. I think he won 38 states, if I recall. okay, which was pretty good, and they never expected anything like that. I don't know whether he won the popular vote. He probably did, but if I recall, there's different numbers coming out, and, you know, on the popular vote side, he would have lost only because they got the whole thing fixed. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done with the corruption on our voting processes. So we got to work on that, and Trump is working on that. I do believe by the time the next major election comes around, all that's going to be cleaned up and done. We're going to have real true election processes again. But we have to understand the balance of power. And the 17th Amendment took the senators away from the states, which means the states are no longer sovereign. Just think about that. By removing the power and the authority of the Senate from the states became subject to the federal government. And, it's Article 5 of the Constitution says that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. That's its equal vote. If the state doesn't have a vote or control or an opinion, a part of a political process to make a decision along with the federal government as the states, for we are the United States, this federal government should not be separated from the United States. It should be the United States. It should be the people, and it should be the states. And our founding fathers put it together in such a fashion as it works both ways. We have representatives through congressmen, and the states have representatives, very, very important. We never would have had this problem. We would never be as far into the problem as we are today if the 17th Amendment was never put forth as if it even was ratified. It wasn't ratified. It wasn't brought together lawfully. It wasn't proposed lawfully to begin with. It was never ratified. And it's unconstitutional, for it changes the whole face of the balance of power of our Constitution. That and the 16th Amendment. But it also destroys the 10th Amendment, totally destroys it. It says here the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Well, we got to get our races or white out and just get rid of that 10th Amendment, because that doesn't exist anymore. It has no power, nothing. The states can't do anything about it because they can't recall their senators. You know, when I was reading these certain sections within the Federalist Papers concerning the Senate and the debate and the argument concerning the Senate, and there was an agreement on this. There's no argument on this. This was an agreement totally, from what I can see, through the Federalist Papers concerning the necessity of both a Senate and two houses, the upper house and the lower house. And it's important, you know, it was important that it was the Senate that controls, you know, who goes into the judiciary, and all of the different appointments within our government goes through the Senate, okay? So, you know, for a Supreme Court just to be a justice, it's the Senate's job to make that decision, and rightly so. The people really aren't qualified for that enough to be able to make a good judgment on that. But the states are much more qualified on that, and they have skin in the game for this. It's important for them to have a just court. It's important for them to have good individuals who are appointed to certain powerful positions by the president. It's the Senate that approves all those things, and these are state issues. It's not people issues. It's state issues. And they've destroyed that whole thing. They just ripped it away. States are no longer sovereign. So any place you see a sovereign state, erase that sovereign. Get your white out. Get rid of it, because they're no longer sovereign. But only we, the people, can return this. We, the people, can force an overturn and requirement to come back to the rule of law, to get rid of the 16th Amendment, get rid of the 17th Amendment, get rid of the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment is just something that hides and changes the difference from we, the people, as having unalienable rights versus civil rights. I don't have civil rights. I have unalienable rights. My rights come from God. They don't come from the courts or from men, from our government. And so that's where this is how important it is. But none of this is going to change. None of this is going to happen We're not going to get just courts. We're not going to have honest statesmen who will obey the Constitution, will be obedient to the Constitution, unless the people get up and take consent of their government, empower themselves, and do what needs to be done. Take back our power. Take back our authority. So it's up to you. And this is, we'll see how many people show up on our Wednesday night meeting this week and participate, and we'll energize no matter how many people come up, and we will go out and start pushing and pressing and getting this message out, building up our membership, waking up those who have fallen asleep, and get energized and get ready to take these positions. So anyway, in this process of looking at the Senate and trying to understand how things were, it became very clear, very, very clear that these two processes are important, one by the people, one by the states. Excuse me. So we have to build a case for that. With this information, I was thinking of adding that into it. But I've come to the point, to the thinking that we should just stick on one point and deal with the 50-50 vote. Constitution is absolutely crystal clear what is required in order to pass the Senate. And that is the purpose of the Vice President, to sit in as President of the Senate, to get that extra vote should they come to a tie. Okay, if it's 50-50, Vice President gets to give that tie vote, done deal. So, okay. Let me see where we're at here. Is Carl available? Did you talk to Carl, Jan?
No, I didn't get a hold of him. He's online right now if you want to unmute him.
Yeah, well, Carl, can you talk right now? I think he's running the radio. But
he is running the radio, so he may not be able to.
All right, well, if Carl can't talk, if you can talk, just talk, if you've unmuted him already. But if not, maybe next week he will get into more detail.
Okay.
Carl's been working on the government by consent course over the past month or two, trying to get all the bugs out and stuff, and I don't think we really had many. One of the big bugs we had there, and I don't know if he's fixed it, was that when you put your answers in and then you go to check, they'll tell you what is correct, but then when you go to move forward to get the ones that are wrong, you lose the ones that are correct. Now, if that's still that way, people who want to make notes on the side so that they can fill those in easily and work on the ones that they didn't get right. So I don't know if Carl fixed that, but if he did, we'll hopefully let you know next week. Any announcements or anything?
I do have, you know, we still have some other needs, John. For example, we have the Welcome Committee struggling along. We still need volunteers who are willing to call people to help out on that committee. We also are looking for volunteers to staff this new committee that we're setting up to arrange news media events for you and Gerard. And we also need speakers for the natural healing call. So if you know someone that's into natural healing of any sort, or you yourself, and you haven't come forward to this point, please just send me an email, jan@nationallibertylines.org, and let me know what you'd like to talk about and what your expertise is. Other than that, I have a couple questions. I have a comment here that I got for Brent, if he's on. They would like to know what to use for a contact for phone or email to reach him. So if whenever he gets on for his talk, if he could just go ahead and give that information, that would take care of that.
Brent is here. Brent, if you're listening, maybe you can unmute and answer that question. I think if you go to his website, commonlawyer.com, you'll find, of course, contact information there. I know you'll get an email. I don't know if you get a phone number.
I'm unmuted, John.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Thank you. Go to commonlawyer.com. Commonlawyer.com. And there's a contact button on that website. If you click on that button, then the email you send there can reach me. That's the easiest way to do it. And then if you want to talk, if you want to talk by telephone, we can make arrangements to do that, but contact me first by email. And then it will be passed on to you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. And we'll be coming back to you in a minute.
I do have one question here, and it's a little bit different than we normally get, but I'll read it for you, John. I am a witness to a huge murder cover-up that involves Google, Digital Globe, Lockheed Martin, Colorado local and federal government. They put one witness in prison, and I'm fighting for my life from gang stalkers trying to cook me with the dues. This is 100% true. Even put their crime in Google Earth and he gives the coordinates. How long does the grid or the girl whose blood is displayed like a stick trophy on Google Earth have to wait to get justice? The killers are still free. Can you help me?
Yeah, you know, the unfortunate thing is right now we can't. You know, our sole purpose right now is to educate, organize, communicate, and empower each other on the grassroots level in order to take control of these processes, which will then allow us to deal with that. So we have to keep our eye on the focus. You know, we too, when we file different cases, and we filed quite a few cases. I was just involved with a couple of cases just recently. And but in any event, you know, to get into a court that actually is run under law, justice, it's pretty difficult. So let me ask Brent and Jan, can you both mute yourself until you want to talk again? But anyway, you know, we will hopefully be available for that too. Once we, the people, get up and seize control and take control, then you could bring it to any grand jury local to you or as local as possible. And get some justice. But until then, it's a shame that we can't really do much. We have to stay focused on our battle at this point. Now, what is possible to talk with some people maybe is with Judicial Watch. You know, we're going to try to get a small committee together hopefully soon and to approach Judicial Watch. They do a lot of research and different things and they're looking into a lot of the criminal activities within our government and so on. And we don't do that per se. We don't have that investigative body or really the education maybe, the ability to really do that. But these people have background in Judicial Watch. They are lawyers. You know, all lawyers are not bad. Remember that. Unfortunately, most of them are corrupted. And I think there's one lawyer I can think of that I know personally, you know, in my life, other than Brent, of course, that was an honest lawyer. All the rest of them, boy, they're pretty shady that I've met. Now, I don't want to say that all lawyers are shady, but it's not looking good for them from my perspective. But a lot of them, or most of them, are. They get corrupted, the money, and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, look, lawyers have a purpose and a place, okay? You have titles, which is equity law, which is mostly what lawyers practice, or should be practicing anyway, is equity law, okay? And those have rules, they have statutes, they have guidelines, they have different things that take place. Some of them are administrative courts, some of them are courts of law. I think there are, goodness, how many are called courts of law? They're not well. They're equity courts, but they apply the law. I forget how many titles. There's 53. I think half of them. About 27 of them. So I think it's 27 is the number that have been enacted as law. Which means, okay, if you're participating in a certain thing, maybe something commercial, or you're participating as an elected individual. And you have to act according to a certain criteria and you're held to certain, statutes, and rightly so. And we empowered Congress to be able to write these laws for that purpose, Okay, so we do need people educated in those areas. I'm certainly not educated in those areas enough to make an argument or a debate. I mean, I could to some degree make some fights and read through the law, but let me tell you, some of these titles, 1,000 pages, that's a lot to go through. So, you know, I think these are important things that we need lawyers for. The problem is lawyers are ruined generally in their schooling when they're educated, especially by bar-controlled schools. And then, of course, they got to take their bar exams. And they purposely leave out education in the Constitution. They purposely do that. And they purposely leave out what common law is, what a court of record is. Very few lawyers have I met under, I have no clue on what that means. Matter of fact, I think I don't know one that understands it. But they don't know. They were never taught that. And that was done on purpose. Many lawyers think common law is the collective decisions of the equity courts. Okay, some of them believe it's the conclusions of the Supreme Court on the appellate levels. Okay, and they think that's what common law is. No, common law is natural law, and you know, I know in our papers we do utilize the decisions of the appellate courts or of the United States Supreme Court for the sole purpose of making and making our position and understood where they agree, and a lot of the decisions are good, by the way, and where they agree, or the meaning of something, or the meaning of a phrase, the meaning of a word, or the conclusion of a matter, which is clear, but then the United States Supreme Court agrees with it. And we should be able to use and exercise the decisions of a United States Supreme Court in any court to force that judge to shut up and do the right thing. You can think what you want, you can say what you want, but right here in this courthouse, as far as anybody's concerned, you have to be obedient to the powers above you, which is the United States Supreme Court. And they have said thus, thus, and thus. And they need to be obedient to that. That's what American jurisprudence is all about, a collection of all those things put together so that judges don't really make decisions, okay? They have to have some decision making to some degree, but they really don't make decisions. It's already played out for them. It's laid out for them in American jurisprudence, how they should act, what the law of the land is. But they look at you like you got six heads when you talk about common law, you know, and different things that upsets their status quo processes, you know. So, but anyway. Judicial Watch may be the place to go. Maybe they are positioned in a way to be able to help you in that case. You know, they are taking on a lot of things, and that case could work with what they're doing right now. Or maybe Judicial Watch can maybe send you to some other group that might be able to assist you. But as far as we here through United National Liberty Alliance, again, we are an education group. We organized as a group to educate, provide, facilitate a place for communication, organization, and ultimately empowerment of all of us that get involved on the grassroots level to take control. And again, when that does happen, you could take it to any grand jury that when we get our courts of record back open and the people are in control of those courts, and it doesn't matter what the judge thinks or says, totally irrelevant. Doesn't matter what the prosecutor says, totally irrelevant, because the people rule. We ordained, we established this Constitution for all of them. We're the boss. They're under the Constitution. We're above it. You make no law concerning my behavior. You make no law concerning how I got to rule or decide if I'm called as a jurist or as a grand jurist. You make no rules over that. I'm totally free. I have unalienable rights and liberty to act and respond according to my own conscience. And that's what people have got to get, to follow their conscience. And that's the key. You know, look at the Bible teaches us that the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? But then he teaches us that the Bible teaches us that that the laws are written in the hearts of men. It's no longer on stone as it was in the Old Testament. The New Testament gave us a heart of flesh, and we can discern right from wrong. Everybody knows murder is wrong. Everybody knows to do evil things on an individual is wrong. Everybody knows thou shalt not steal. Everybody knows those things. That's the law of the heart. That's the law written in everyone's heart. And that being the case, if we follow our hearts and follow our conscience, we'll always have and make the right decisions. And that includes in a court as a jurist. But we do need to understand the evils that will come out to try to destroy that, take control of those things. You know, we need to prevent that from happening, and we do that through education. So we have to become educated. And we do orientate the people enough, or we're going to orientate the people enough, that even if they don't have that kind of an education, in 6 to 8 hours they'll have enough of the information necessary in order to go out and make a ruling from the heart and their conscience to do the right thing, the just thing. And, you know, when you bring 12 people together, let's take a court of law. You bring 12 people together, and they're all looking at this, trying to understand what happened here. Who did what? What's the injury? Did this person do it? So on and so forth. There's 12 different points of view. You're being totally looked at. If you are the object of that jury, every aspect of everything took place in that court. Every word you say, as you know, trying to defend yourself, if you're the object. Everything that person says, it's being looked at by 12 different states of mind, 12 different individuals. And when they get together collectively at the end of the day, or the end of the case, to try to decide, is this person innocent or guilty? And if he's guilty, what are we going to do to fix the injured party? You know, I think we're going to, you know, and people are working, trying to do the just thing, trying to follow their conscience, following their heart, considering mercy at the end of the day, and it may be decided no mercy for this guy, but mercy's got to be considered at the end of the day. And I think we would have really great decisions, because that's the way ultimately God has set it up. That's the way that makes sense. Clearly a political tribunal cannot give the proper responses or answers one driven by the heart or by the people themselves. Now, it is true on certain political cases where titles are involved, they're held to run the law, and rightly so, because they wanted to participate in that nature of things. And they're earning money. That's the way they're making their living, commercially, politically, whatever the case may be. And they're empowered with certain powers or things to do, or they're able to do things, and they're prevented from abusing people on the commercial end. And we've given the authority to Congress to write laws concerning those things, and rightly so, and they do. And generally speaking, I think it's all pretty good. You know, I used to not have that opinion as I was working through my own education, trying to understand how these things work and how does the titles come to play and, you know, what the statutes and how statutes apply on the people and all those things, you know, trying to work it out. And over time, everybody wants to really get educated. And again, the course that we put together will cover all these things. I think we will. We pretty much cover all these things. Can't think of anything we spoke about yet since we started our program tonight that's not going to be covered or isn't already covered in the course. And while we're talking about the course, I think we're done up to chapter 6. Is that what it is? Do you remember, Jan? What is the course up to? Chapter 6? I don't know, maybe Jan got disconnected. I don't see him with a mute box. Jan, there's something wrong with your, or you on the console. Oh, okay, yeah. I guess he's disconnected right now. Okay, but anyway, I think we're up to chapter 6. And we're going to have, I don't know, quite a few chapters. I'm still writing more chapters. Got some of the latter chapters done or ready to go. They just have to be perfected. But we've stopped, I think, at chapter 6, working on chapter 7 and 8. And once we get those two chapters, the other chapters will follow quickly because most of that is already written up already. Those who have gotten up to that area yet and are waiting to move along again to be opened back up into the next chapters, we're working on that as soon as possible. I was kind of hoping to get that done over the holidays, but with my illness and things, I'm just really just now getting back up on my feet again. So I've been down for a month, and we've been out, of course, for the holidays. So for 2 weeks we're out, and I was out two almost 3 weeks before that. So, you know, I've been ill for 5 weeks, and but feeling a lot better now. I think I'm pretty much back in play, and I feel pretty good right now. So health-wise, anyway. Well, all wise, to be honest with you. Okay, let's see what else I have before I move over to Brent. I think we're done. Jan, did you get back in yet? Looks like he was kicked off. Okay, I don't see him. He may be rebooting. All right, so we'll move over. We're going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready to take the mic? Brent Winters, he is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law. Brent Winters is a common lawyer. His website is commonlawyer.com, and he's going to teach us something tonight. Brent, you got the mic. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And my comments are my own. I claim them. They may or may not be the comments of the other principals of National Liberty Alliance, but we have found that most times they are. We've been talking about the Constitution of the United States. We, over the months, have gone through clause by clause, blow by blow, the Declaration of 76, and now we're into the first article of the Constitution of the United States, Section 8, Clause 1. That's where we left off before the holidays. It says this, I'm reading from Section 8, Clause 1. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. That's Section 8, Clause 1 of Article 1. And we had pointed out last time that it says here Congress has the power to collect taxes. Doesn't say that the IRS has the power, which, as a matter of law, would be the president, the executive branch. It says Congress has that power. I dare say if Congress were the ones that had control of collecting the taxes, things would be a whole lot different. The way it is now, it's a bureaucracy that neither Congress nor the president claims any power to control, although that's not true. The president could stop what the IRS does. It's a branch, supposedly, of the Treasury Department. But this is important, that we follow the Constitution. It says Congress has the right to collect taxes. If Congress had the power to collect taxes and they were heavy-handed in doing so, Congress would be changed pretty often, be my guess. Well, then it says, of course, repeating the preamble of our Constitution. It says, to provide for the common defense of the general welfare. Well, it's not quoting the preamble exactly. The preamble says that this Constitution is written and the purpose behind it is provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare. Well, how do you provide for the common defense? Well, you do it through taxation. That's what you're supposed to do. And how do you promote? And that's different from providing, by the way. Not providing general welfare, promoting the idea of general welfare. Now, because the Federal Reserve is now a money printing machine, the power of Congress to provide for the national defense with tax dollars is effectively gone. In fact, we discover through the Mises Commission, which was the commission that Ronald Reagan appointed to investigate taxation and where it comes from and where it goes. It was discovered at that time that not one thin dime of taxes went to provide any services for this, the people of the United States. All the money went to pay interest on national debt. And that's the way the system that is put in place is supposed to work. Now, that's not the system that the Constitution puts in place, but the system of the Twin Sisters, of the Federal Reserve Bank, and the IRS. The reason for that system is to print money, and when you need it, you print it. And that's the way the president, the executive branch, has money he wants to invade foreign countries, et cetera, without really asking Congress and without declaring war. That's a fundamental problem, and that's why back during the days when Ron Paul was running for president, he boiled it down to that one thing and wrote a little booklet, you can still buy it, called End the Fed. He said, on the human plane, this is the crux, the bottom line, the key to all of our problems is the Federal Reserve Bank. It is a money printing machine. It is a counterfeiting operation. That's what it is. And by running that, then tax dollars do not fund government anymore. Tax dollars, rather, are part of this circular machine where the government borrows money and then pays its pays interest on the money it borrows. It's an inconsistent, circular sham. So confusing to the minds of most people that they throw their hands up in frustration, say they can't understand it. Well, that's true. They can't understand it. Why? Because it's a sham. A sham makes no sense. It's just a sham. Well, that little comment there about the fundamental problems that when it comes to taxes. But let's get to the second part of this, where it talks about duties and taxes. Now, there are different kinds of taxes. And if you remember, that was the question when the most recent health care bill was challenged and brought up to the Supreme Court of the United States. The question was, is this a tax? And Justice Roberts, writing the opinion for the court, said it was. Of course it is. Anytime the government comes to the people of the United States under force, a threat of force, says pay, well, that's tax. I don't care whether they call it a Social Security trust fund contribution or whether they call it something you throw in for health care, some kind of a Social Security policy. It's tax because once you pay it to government, it becomes theirs entirely. Well, this particular power to lay and collect taxes is given to Congress, and here it cites three kinds of taxes. First, it cites what are called duties. Duties are taxes on goods coming into the United States, and that's also called external revenue, to be in contrast with what we call internal revenue, which is an income tax. This is external revenue. That's duties, such as border taxes, customs duties for products coming into the United States. And that's for which the U.S. Coast Guard, Customs, and the Border Patrol are enforcement arms. Let me say that again. The U.S. Coast Guard, U.S. Customs, and Border Patrol are enforcement arms primarily, among other duties they have, but primarily all that's to enforce external taxation or external, the External Revenue Department, as distinguished from the Internal Revenue Department. In England, just to make the comparison, we call it internal revenue when it comes from people of the United States. In England, they call it inland revenue, which is the same idea, from within the country. Excises, we've talked about duties, excises are taxes on sales, product use, and production, business procedures, and privileges within the United States. To say that again, that was a mouthful. excises are taxes on sales, product use, production, business procedures, and privileges within the United States. For example, people talk about the revenuers. There are a lot of people in federal prison today, a lot of people, for moonshine, for producing alcoholic beverages without a license and without paying taxes on them. That's a tax on production, you see. And that's what an excise is, just as an example. So duties are taxes on things coming within into the United States across the borders. Excises are taxes on production and privileges. For example, if somebody incorporates, there's a tax on that incorporation. Now, that's a state matter, not a federal matter. But there are certain taxes that come on the privilege of limited liability. That's what incorporation is. LLCs, LLPs, C-Corps, S-Corps, those are all corpuses, I call them. Corpses, really, dead persons. Not persons at all, but they're called persons. But they can only exist with limited liability at the permission of government. And there's a tax that can be attached to that. That's called an excise. So duties, excises, and then finally, we have what we call imposts. Now, this is confusing. It's redundant. It shouldn't have been said, but imposts is a general term for both duties and excises. So really all you have is duties and excises, but they throw the word impost in there just to make sure they have a catch-all phrase that includes everything. So excises, that's really all there are, duties, excises. Duties, remember, are taxes on things coming across the borders of the United States into the country. Excises are taxes on sales, sale tax is an excise. So you pay that maybe in your state so much on the sale of goods by the dollar, 6%, whatever it is. But there are also taxes, excises, we call them, on things like tobacco, liquor, amusement. Those are also, for example, when you buy a pack of cigarettes or a cigar, you pay an excise tax on tobacco. We talked about liquor. Now, tobacco and firearms, the ATF, and the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, these are bureaucracies and are enforcement arms. Enforcement arms. And that has to do with taxation, too, if there's taxes on ammunition, you see. That's a tax on production, so that would be a duty, that would be an excise tax. From our Constitution stems three branches, as you know, three branches from that trunk of that tree called the Constitution of the United States, rooted, as it were. This tree is rooted in our common law, from which it draws its principles. It grows up, and there are three branches grown out of this tree, each of these branches independent of the other and wholly dependent upon the tree, the trunk of the tree, for their livelihood, their sap in that trunk we call the Constitution of the United States. So the legislative branch is Congress. The other branch is the executive branch. That's the President of the United States and all that he controls. And the third branch, of course, is the judicial branch. That's the federal courts, according to our U.S. Constitution. Now, these are the branches of the general government, of the United States. Excuse me. For example, our courts, the judicial branch, must object when the president, which is the executive branch, judges crimes, because the common law and our Constitution allot judicial power to the judicial branch alone. Congress must protest when the president, that is the executive branch, collects taxes, which he is now doing. Or the courts, the judicial branch, or the president, executive branch, enact law, because the common law, our common law, and our Constitution lodge all legislative and tax collection power in Congress. I just read that to you from the Constitution of the United States. So also the president must lay claim to his duty to command the armed forces of the United States. If Congress or our courts try to exercise direct military control, because our Constitution recognizes that only the President of the United States has direct authority over the armed forces of the United States. This is all a matter of separation of powers. And by these separations, power is never to be gathered into the hand of a single will, all power. Now, Congress, for example, is made up of hundreds of persons. But every time they act, pass a piece of legislation, they combine all of that, all of those wills, the wills of all those persons, what each one of them wants, into one. They speak with one single will, you see. And the president, of course, he's one person. He speaks with one single will. And the courts, whether by the jury or by the judge or a panel of judges, we say they speak with a single will. There is a will of each one of them, and it is an influential will. And we keep those separate, never to be allow the gathering of all three powers into a single will, ensuring that government never violates individual rights. And remember, individual rights are responsibilities. That's what a right is. A right is a responsibility to act or not to act respecting a given matter. And individual rights, we call them fundamental rights, not civil rights. Fundamental rights are those rights that are given direct to the creator, to the individual, with no intermediary between. Thus also the headquarters and offices of the legislative, executive, and judicial powers must be far removed into separate buildings that are in Washington, D.C. for that very purpose, symbolically and practically for that reason. It used to be that the Supreme Court held its deliberations of this and its cases in the legislative building, called the building, the Congressional Building. That was changed, happily, and they were removed to their own building for that very reason, to make a picture and the reality of the separations of powers. Because if that's not done, and there's too much buddying together between the members of the branches of the government, that breeds incestuous relationships that destroy independent legal judgment, fosters the gathering of power. I don't remember which Supreme Court justice it was, but during the presidency of Lyndon Johnson, he was invited to the White House on different occasions. Sometimes he'd suffer, sometimes for a particular event, and he would never go, and never did go, and he encouraged the other members of the Supreme Court never to go to the White House. Because he said, and I believe he was right, that it would tend to give the possibility anyway of the appearance that the Supreme Court supported what the president did, especially what he was doing in Southeast Asia at that time, the war. And he thought it was wrong that there even be an appearance of any collusion between the powers of government, whether they supported it or whether they didn't support it. They wanted to maintain the appearance of independence and give no indication of support by showing up at the White House. The President of the United States or any other person who may himself be the accuser, counsel, judge, or jury, whose suspicions may be the evidence, his order, the sentence, his officer, the executioner, and in his breast, the sole record of the transaction, shall reduce the inhabitants of these states as outlaws to the absolute dominion of one man, and the barrier of the Constitution thus swept away from all of us. No rampart now remains against the passions and the powers of majority of Congress. That was a quote from James Madison and Tom Jefferson, the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798. Let me read that again. I'll try to read a little slower. It's a simple concept. It's fundamental. But it's the simple things that I think we have trouble with. The president or any other person who may himself be the accuser, counsel, judge, and jury, whose suspicions may be the evidence, his order, the sentence, his officer, the executioner, and his breast, the sole record of the transaction, shall reduce the inhabitants of these states as outlaws to the absolute dominion of one man, and the barrier of the Constitution thus swept away from all us, from us all, no rampart now remains against the passions and the powers of a majority in Congress. That's fact. The passions and powers of a majority in Congress. Remember, our Constitution's a paper barrier. It doesn't amount to much. Its passions kick in. Once lusts kick in, and believe me, they've already kicked in. The Constitution doesn't mean anything. It's as the former Speaker of the House, Joe Cannon, said back about 1910 of Teddy Roosevelt. He said he doesn't have any more respect for the Constitution of the United States than a tomcat does for a marriage license. Well, that makes the point. And that's what I say to these folk now that we see the holding the levers of power. They have no more respect for the Constitution than a tomcat for a marriage license. And not that I think you ought to have respect for a marriage license either. It was just an analogy. And that, of course, matter of fact, marriage licenses were a late comer about the time of Joe Cannon. Nobody ever thought about it before. Well, the Constitution is a paper barrier. Once passions kick in, nothing will stop them from going under, around, or through, or over the Constitution of the United States. Well, then what holds things in place? You do, that's who. If you have, first of all, you can't have the conviction that the Constitution is the law of the land, as it says it is. You can't have that conviction until you know something about what it says. If you do, you're like people that say that they found the Bible and say they believe it, but most people don't have a clue what's in it to do that. It's been my experience. But if you do that with the Constitution, you're in the same category. You got to know what's in it. Take time every day. Get a copy of it. Get up in the morning early and say, well, I'm going to read two pages or one page, just one page out of my book that's on the Constitution. I'm just going to read that one page. Do it when you're relaxed. Get yourself a cup of coffee. If you smoke, light up a cigarette. I hope you don't smoke, but if you do, if that's how you relax, relax. And look at it. Read it slowly. In the morning's a good time because your mind isn't muddled as badly as it is later. And just read a page out of your little booklet on the Constitution and contemplate what it says. I think you'll be fascinated. And it won't be boring to you if you catch it first thing in the morning like that. It won't take long. And it's the consistency of it. You do a little of that every day, pretty soon you're through it. It's the dailiness that gets us and moves us forward to tasks like that. Well, let's see what else might be said here. Finally, the IRS closes the circle of the scheme is complete. I mentioned a while ago that nobody wants to take the responsibility for collecting taxes. It's easy to blame the IRS, even when you're responsible. But Congress is to blame. Congress is to blame for the abuses of the IRS. Why? Because this clause says they're the ones charged with collecting taxes. And the IRS has nothing to do with Congress. The IRS is at least legally arguable, part of the executive branch, the enforcement branch. So Congress alone is to blame. They say, we only enforce the laws. It passes. That's what the IRS says. The IRS says, well, Congress passes the laws, the president signs them. Hey, we're just here to enforce the laws. So they think they're all good, too, I suppose. Each branch, everybody. The congressman blames the IRS. The IRS blames the congressman. The president says, I can't stop the IRS, which is true, he can. I can't stop them, the president says, until Congress empowers me with legislation to do so. So each branch of government skirts its sworn duty. What's a sworn duty? Of every person in it. To support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic. That's what it is. They skirt their duty. Blame the other fellow. Point the finger. Point at each other. Duping the people, who then shirk their duty as grand jurors to hold culprits punishable for crimes against Americans under the mere stolen banner of tax collection powers. Happens all day, every day in America. Bottom line, because only Congress delay taxes, our Constitution also tasks it alone with collecting taxes. That's the way I read it. Although I don't see it happening. Because congressmen face regular elections. Only Congress will stop election abuses. And if necessary to get recollected, Congress will end a tax altogether. If not, the people will elect a new congressman until Congress owns its constitutional responsibility to collect taxes. Make one point in here. Somebody sent me a series of quotes from American known. It was Corpus Juris. That's a set of volumes. Claiming to cite every case in the United States every year when it comes out. Someplace, they say, we cite every case that's been handed down in the United States. It's a comprehensive set of books, and it's a good one, but they sent me, these people sent me quotes from Corpus Juris Segundum that say that lawyers are, their loyalty as a matter of law lies first to the courts and second to the client. First to the courts and second to the client. And, of course, I've heard this often, and I've heard that the courts have said such things. That's true. I emailed this fellow back, messaged him. I said, well, the courts may say that. But not only is it not true, it can't be true. And the reason it can't be true is because every lawyer truly is licensed to practice before any particular court of the United States or within the states. Takes an oath, has to. Constitution requires that officers of government, and that's what lawyers are, they're not paid a salary, but they are nonetheless officers of the judicial branch. They must take an oath. And so the oath runs in general like the oath of military men, other government officials, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign. That means willingness to take up arms and enemies domestic. That means willingness to serve on a jury or to protect the law of the land otherwise. In other words, those are the two duties of the militia of the several states. Every lawyer takes that oath in America. Well, if every lawyer takes that oath in America, that his duty is first and foremost to the law of the land, and that's what our Constitution says it is, a brief top pocket. If their loyalty is that, then how can their loyalty be to the court? That's senseless. And courts that say that are talking nonsense. Why they say it, I don't know what's in their heads. I know it's untrue. And lawyers, their duty is to the law, to the common law, as a matter of fact. And that's their highest duty. And any other loyalty is no loyalty at all, because as our common law says, split loyalty is no loyalty at all. What do I mean when I say split loyalty? I mean people like that fellow of Cuban descent that ran for president, Senator Cruz, Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz tried to run for president while he was a citizen of Canada. That's senseless. Split loyalty is no loyalty at all. By the way, that's why bigamy is against the law in every state. Why? Because split loyalty is no loyalty at all. There's a good Bible on it. By the way, one of the most quoted, matter of fact, it's maybe the second most quoted verse in the Bible, quoted by the courts of the United States, is the verse where Jesus Christ says, no man can serve two masters. It's impossible. Why? He split his loyalty. It's not even possible. You will always either love the one, hate the other, or just not love either one of them. In other words, not do your duty toward either one. So when you hear those kind of things about lawyers have a duty to the court, just remember or say to people, that's not even possible. They may do that. They may think that. They may think they're being loyal to the court, but they can't do that and keep their oath. Their oath is to the Constitution of the United States. Back to you, Gerard or John. Thanks for the time. Let me say a few words.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go to our open forum. We got some people in the queue, so we'll go to people with questions. Let's see. Let's take our first question. Chris from Pennsylvania, you got the mic.
Yeah, good evening. have a few questions. I'd like to touch on something you said too. I was wondering if I have this correct. I'm just learning this stuff. You know, I'm getting hearing things from all different sides. Anytime I see something with my name all in capital letters, that's my straw man. Is that correct?
Well, look, they do play that game. That is true. Okay, but it should have no place in law. They will never build a case.
No, I'm not talking about law.
Yeah, here's one of the problems. We put our attention sometimes towards the things that really just spin our wheels and we never get anywhere. There's a lot of poison out there in the internet. Some of it is, good-intentioned people trying to figure things out, and maybe they just haven't studied careful enough, and they come up with bad conclusions, and they're really trying to be helpful. But you get a lot of bad stuff there. Some of the enemies actually participating.
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out.
Yeah, I'm going to try to explain.
I got a few questions here, and that would let me know a little bit whether it's.
Yeah. I'll answer that question. I just want to kind of build up towards it first, and we'll give you time to talk and ask other questions on this point. But the key thing is this, and I when I first started to become aware of the truth, and my sojourn started about 1999, my first class with the IRS, and then that's when I was starting to try to understand what's really going on here. And things led up, and I've learned a lot of things. I got involved with Robert Schultz and his organization, We the People, a good organization, and they did a lot of things. And I got myself involved with, as time went on, the Ron Paul movement and Tea Parties and so on and so forth. And then, of course, we built up this National Liberty Alliance, which I think was about 7 years ago. 6 years ago, something like that. But in any event, I was searching the internet trying to figure things out. And this group would say this, and that group would say that, and the other group would say the other thing. And I don't want to say that a lot of these things are wrong. They got a point. It's created that way. It works that way, but they're not going to talk about it. Since they're not going to make the argument, why should we? Here's the key. When we go into court and we make a battle, let's stick on what's right and wrong, what's truth, what's fraud, okay? And that's the key. If you stay on that point and stick there, you'll be in a much better position. So if you're trying to make an argument in a court, and because there's caps in your letters, it depends on what court you're going into, and let's think about how we can defend ourselves in that court and maybe get out of that jurisdiction where we don't belong. So if you're looking at, for instance, an IRS case where they come in and they put your name, and all the courts put your names in all caps. And again, that is kind of setting the stage to kind of bring you into not being a, how would I say it? The caps bring you into your straw person, as you say. The bottom line is jurisdiction, and that's how you can beat any of these things. You can challenge the jurisdiction.
That's what I'm talking about. It's
a little difficult to explain, but it depends on what kind of case. If you're talking about let's talk about a town case. Or what kind of a case are you talking about, so I can focus in on that?
I'm not talking about any particular cases. If you let me finish here,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm talking about corporations. Mm-hmm. Now, all right, maybe I'd jump back to what you were talking about earlier before we get to this part. You're talking about our government. And, okay, so what is our government? Are you talking about the U.S. government?
Well,
U.S. Inc.?
We have numerous governments.
Maybe I'll back up a little further. All right, apparently our Constitution, right, 1776 or a few days after that.
Well, Constitution 1789.
War, we 1789.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I said that, or... A few years after, whatever. I have the exact date. It was at Civil War. We go broke. Now we borrow from the was it London Bank, the England, London Bank, which is Rothschilds, all that. That's where we ended up with our second constitution, what I gather, the Organic Act of 1871. I thought that was the only one. I found out recently, or I've been told at least, that didn't last very long. Then there was another one, and I'm not sure about that. But anyway, that's where it gets in, where our whole government now is a corporation. And that's where all this is coming from. Getting closer to where I'm talking about, what you said about, okay, our jury administrators, committee men, all this. Now, I'm wondering how is this going to work? When we're actually, I guess, lack of better words, we're British subjects, citizens. Thanks to our birth certificate, the fraud that was pulled on us, and that's where we get into the part about our names being straw man. All capital letters, that's what they've taken control of, and we got to make it clear that, no, I'm a flesh and blood living man, woman, or child. And here, now, to get back to what I was starting here, now, my name in all caps, is that correct? That's a straw man, which
there's a lot to look at. You brought up a lot of different things, and what you're really defining...
Well, it's all just leading to this one
what
thing.
Their construction, look at, law is construction, okay? And they've been constructing law in order to bring us and capture us into what's called corporatism, okay?
Yes.
And that's what you're talking about, and that's what this is all about. So all of that has validity. And the Organic Act, I think it was 1871. I think that's what you said.
Yeah.
It was, and I think it is.
Yeah.
The Organic Act of 1871 created another nation in a let's see, how would I put it? A nation within a nation within
a city. In Washington,
D.C., a
10-square-mile area.
Right. So we understand all that, but that's the conspiracy, okay?
Yeah.
And that, even though they make decisions in their courts, a lot of these courts, we go into these courts, we try to open up a court of record, we end up in an equity court, and we're constantly beat up in these courts, and they make these decisions because the judges are holding up what's called a status quo, okay?
Yeah.
Now, in order to beat these systems, and even what I'm going to say, you still might not be able to beat the system or beat the court case, but we've had a little bit of a success here and there, and the positions we hold, they can't argue against. They don't want us in the courts. So if they pull us into the courts, sometimes they can't wait to get us out of the courts. If we go into the courts, they're always throwing us out of the courts. So it's a constant battle. What we're up against is what's called fraud. To learn and understand all these things that you're talking about, and I'm very familiar with it. I learned the same things. I came into this process the same way, trying to understand what was going on. Totally ignorant. There's really no place to figure this stuff out, to learn it. There's nowhere that I have found to learn how to get into the courts, how the courts work, what is the law, what's the difference between law and equity. I used to belong to this group that discussed the legal matters, and some of these people claim to have been lawyers, maybe just claiming to be a lawyer, which is fine. You could claim to be a lawyer if you're really educated as a lawyer in whatever field of lawyer that you're studying, whatever field of law you're studying. And then there are some people that are bar lawyers that have come out of it, and, they're agreeing there's problems. And I've listened to these people talk, and none of them can really lay down the difference between equity courts and courts of law. They just so confused. And so was I for years. It's the same thing with the difference between Republican and Democrat. You know, I remember when I was very young, I was 18 years old, I wanted to register to vote. I was figuring out what I wanted to be. I think my parents were Democrats. I don't really remember. But I was trying to figure out, because they never made a big deal about that. I was trying to figure out what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat. And, I came to certain conclusions on my own that, a Republican really is focused in on the law. And I realized that must be what I would want to be, so I became a Republican. But people could not answer that question. People are Democrats, they're Republicans, and they don't know the difference between the two. And ultimately, there is none. It's just the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. And that's really all it is.
This is getting way, way, way off of my question.
I understand. Let me get back to your point, though. You don't want to go into a court and make the argument on that level. You always look at jurisdiction. No. That's the key. You go find out what the jurisdiction of the court
is. It's not really with the court. If you just let me get my question.
Reality is the way one perceives it. If you become captured by that process and you start to give up your license, try to get rid of your birth certificate somehow, get rid of your Social Security, put the papers, the certificates of declarations within your county to let them know this is who I am and this is what I'm doing. I'm one of the people. I'm a real people, flesh and blood with a beating heart, and go through all that stuff. It doesn't do anything for you but other than mark you as one of the first people they're going to come out to get rid of when they come down the streets to execute us in our backyards. Now, we're past that point, I believe, now with Trump.
All right. Well, that was something I wanted to touch on a little bit maybe later. But this, what I'm talking about is using what they've done to us against them. Now, if you just –
You'll never
win
it.
This. Pardon?
You'll never win that battle. You can never use what they've done against them. They will always put forth the status quo, okay? And the very rare situations, very rare situations – people might be able to beat them, but it'll never happen a second time because they close the ranks and change the law and change things.
You don't even know what I'm
asking
yet.
Well, I understand you're making a position of a standing. That's where you're really looking for, a standing. And you're talking about your cap-lettered person and who is a straw man and so on and so forth. I understand all that. But all that to me, all that to me is a crime.
I guess we're not going to get that answered then. So,
well, you'll get the answer is this: it's a crime, and you can go into court. They'll never bring it up because I can show real clearly and quickly that it's a crime. They will not bring it up, but it is structured that way mostly for the future. A lot of the of course it comes out of the commercial realms where they have the power and the authority, and the law at sea, where they have the power and the authority to make certain statutes that control the systems and the processes and the commercial businesses and all those things. Somehow it's got to be controlled, and that's agreed upon. But when it comes to the law of the land, they've crept that and brought that stuff into the law of the land, and they've worked this out, and it goes back a lot further than 1871, but 1871 was the big blow of destruction, okay, yeah. With the Organic Act. What you're looking at is standing, I think. Well, what's your position on this? I'm not sure that.
Well,
that's what
we're trying to get, but we keep getting way off on us the whole way, long ways around the barn here. Now,
okay.
I said first, was that correct that my name in all capital letters is the Straw Man?
Means nothing to me. I ignore it. Means nothing to me.
Okay.
I know what they think it means.
Well, what I've been hearing is that, what?
I know what they think it means. I know the game they're playing, and a lot of judges may not even know about what all this stuff. The federal judges seem to know, but the state judges and the others, they don't really know any of that stuff. Very rarely do you get a judge educated at that level that understands the real game that they're playing, which is really a conspiracy to destroy America and bring it into corporatism. Because all these things you're talking about is the process of structuring everything, construction of law to construct the process to create the corporations in order to come into corporatism. Corporatism and Nazism is synonymous.
Yeah.
And that's where it's at. So if we want to get into the reality here and we're going to go into the court and make a battle, they can put all the caps they want. We'll kick butt on jurisdiction. Okay? And that's where the battle is. And what all this other stuff takes you away from where you can really make your standing, okay? Because you get law, and then they say, you're a nut. What you're saying is true, but they'll mock you. Look at this wacko. What conspiracy is he bringing?
Well, like I said, I'm not really intending to go to court. I'd let you know that if I could finish here.
All right, well,
anyway.
Go ahead. Finish your point. Let me know when to respond. Go ahead.
All right. Well, first, apparently, that's your straw man, from what I understand, and which means they've profited by it somehow. And anything I'm charged for using that name has already been paid for. So my point was getting, like, say, for instance, now I just got a bill from the municipal authority, the water authority. My question B, it's all in capital letters. That means it's a corporation. That's not me. That's my straw man that's being billed.
Okay.
So can I bring up that I wouldn't really need to be paying that? Now, that part I might need to go to court into.
They're going
to
shut the water off.
Them in a way. But apparently,
if you don't pay it, if you don't pay it, they're going to shut your water off.
Well, that was another question of it. What I do about them, you know, if I could win that, what's to stop them from
shutting the water
off?
You go to court and you lose.
You wouldn't know a procedure that you'd need to do.
You go to court. You go to court and you lose because, first of all, you go to the wrong court. You won't know which court to go to. You know, you have the village court, the town courts, the county courts, the state courts, federal courts, and then there are a whole bunch of other courts, and then, of course, all the appellate courts and all these other things going on. So there's lots of courts. Which court do I go to? Also, you're going to try to make a standing, and if you're going to make a standing on the capital letters, those people on the level you're arguing on, they're not even know what you're talking about. They think that's wacko because they don't know the game. They don't understand that they're being brought into captivity through corporatism. They don't know any of that. The only ones that I think know this is the federal judges. They have to know, okay? They got to know, and they do know. But the state judges, I think very few know it. Town judges and the village judges, they're all morons. So they have no education at all. They have a week's worth of classes
on
to do this, do that, and everybody loses. The court always wins. And everybody loses, but that's you have no standing. Now, if you want to go into these courts and make the battle, of course you don't want to do that with the water because you need to pay your water bill. But let's say you want to make an IRS battle. Okay, you can make a good strong IRS battle. Let's say you want to make a mortgage battle for a foreclosure. You can make a very strong mortgage battle, and in some cases you could win. And if you understand how to take the case from one place to another and move it into another court for cause, like the federal court for cause, which would be a constitutional issue, and win on the constitutional issue and never have to deal with the actual issue of the straw man and the unconstitutionality and the fact that the 16th Amendment was never amended and that it never brought to into play. The Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that it has never brought into play to bring a taxation against income. They've already declared that numerous times. But you won't win the cases making those arguments. You got to do it different way.
Well,
you
got
to learn to make the argument on jurisdiction, which brings you into standing. And then they shouldn't be able to beat you there. But you got to know what to do next because they'll try. Look at when you go into a court and you're going up against the establishment, the status quo, you know the judge is going to maintain the status quo. The judge is doing one thing. He's sizing you up. He's trying to figure out who exactly you are and what you really know. And by how you write your papers and the things you say in the court, he'll make certain judgments and say, I can kick this guy's butt all day long and he's never going to get to me and I'm not at risk. But there's other people come in and the judge can't figure them out because maybe they got the right positions, they understand what's going on, they understand the game, they're making the moves on a jurisdictional level or, you know, positions, and the judge starts to get a little worried. He's got to have a place to hang his hat because you may appeal the system, you may move it over into a new board decision from a group of judges before you get into the appellate process. There's a lot of things that can go on. Now, This may sound a little complex if you're hearing this for the first time, but if you start to look at these things, and we teach these things on the website here, and start to put your time into the things that will win you in court or win your positions and be able to make a good stand, because you're already working on the other side, okay, which is not going to get you anywhere, I'll tell you right now. I've been there and done that. There's a lot of us here in National Liberty Alliance been there, done that. You're not getting anywhere. But you can win on jurisdiction.
I had another question. I don't know whether you would have knowledge or Brent or Jan or what.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're familiar with the manufacturer's certificate of origin, your automobile?
Yes. Yeah.
Could any of you guys tell me how I go about getting it back? Now, here
you're
in Pennsylvania,
between a rock
I guess
and a hard
it would.
Place.
Pardon?
You, like everyone else, is stuck between a rock and a hard place. Look it. You go in there and you make
your
position.
Well, I don't know if I can get it back. They may refuse, but I'm just curious of what procedure to try to do it.
Let me tell you. I don't know of any procedure to do that. Not that it doesn't exist, okay, but I know the game they play. Let's take a traffic ticket. okay? You go in to fight the traffic ticket. Everybody makes the wrong position and argument. The argument has to be on what, who are they going after? They're calling you a client, okay? If you look at the ticket, they say client's ID number. The client ID number is your driver's license, okay? That's your client ID number. So I acknowledge the fact that I have a driver's license for the purpose of commercial business. I acknowledge the fact that when I was driving down the street and I was abruptly stopped, you know, by an officer, I'm not going to give the guy a hard time. He asked for my driver's license. I only got one. That's a commercial driver's license. I carry it in my back pocket. I use it for ID all the time, and I do drive commercially from time to time, so I need that. So I give him the driver's license. But you get into the court, well, wait a second, you're calling me a client. I'm not in that process. You're on a commercial process here, an administrative court that's operating under commercial processes or rules and regulations developed by the Department of Motor Vehicles, has nothing to do with me. You see, there's your argument. Forget about whether you're speeding or not.
I studied up on that a couple weeks ago.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Okay? You're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You're not going to very few people are going to be able to get away with driving without a license. I know of one person, but he spent a lot of time in jail, and from time to time he still does. Okay? Michael Bodnarik, a well-known individual, president of the Third Continental Congress here some years back. I think it was, I forget what year, 2008, I think, or something. He drives all over the place without a license, and most places won't stop him, okay? Because he has defeated them, and he's got a background and a history. But still he gets stopped, and still he has to spend some time in jail because he bucks the system and so on. I don't have time to spend in jail, so I decided I'll get a license. And I do drive commercially occasionally. I've driven, it's been a long time, but I have driven commercially. So I need one anyway. And it's a great ID. But you're not going to get in a car and drive without a driver's license because you're going to find yourself arrested constantly. Now, they do the same thing with the vehicle. You're looking for a certificate
Certificate of origin. Manufacturer's certificate of origin.
Right. So you're looking
This is brought up at one of your conference calls 2-3 weeks ago.
They found out that
there was about a video on it. And how it said that the trick that they use, they get you on this, is with the MCO, MSO, MCO. Since they take it, trick you out of it, you buy a car.
You're in partnership and ownership with them.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Not really. They're really the owner. And by doing it, they trick you out of it.
That's why you're bound
to go by all the statutes on it.
Listen to me. That's not really true. Okay, that is the construction of law that's being abused and exercised, and people are ignorant, and they're exercising it and upholding it, judges and all these people, okay? It is all a fraud. It's not true law. It has no validity. When we get back our courts, when we get back to the court of law, we get back our grand juries, okay? We build the administrations across this nation, all of that's going to disappear. It's all going to go away. But as far as you can't drive without registering a vehicle. They put us between a rock and a hard place. You can't open up a bank account without a Social Security number. I know one or two people who have done it. It's a real big, hard thing to do, and in most cases, you're not going to get it done anyway. But, you know, the thing is they caught us, and they put us between the rock and the hard place and forced us into these positions. So what do we have to do? So I have a driver's license, so I don't go to jail, okay? Right. If they give me a ticket when I'm driving, will they ask me for my license? I never respond in person. I always respond on paper, okay? I also don't allow the judge to make any decisions, to decide whether he has jurisdiction or not. He's got to hear the case, and it's up to the prosecutor to prove jurisdiction, not up to the judge. Okay. You got to take the different approach. I know what they're teaching out there, and you can learn, and it's a little bit safe. You know, you usually shouldn't go to jail for making the battle and making the arguments, although you got to be careful. They will put you in jail. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. But nevertheless, you can learn, but you're learning the wrong things. Okay. Learn about jurisdiction. Learn what is true law. What is titles? What are rules? What are their purposes? Who do they apply upon? Okay. What power and authority do the town courts and the city courts and the village courts have? Where do they get their authority? You know, are they administrative courts? Are they nisi prius courts? Are they courts of equity? You know, that's the question. Discover what it is. Lay it out on paper, and they can't move. They can't move.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Okay. Let's take our next caller. Let's see. 9054. No name up there. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 8998. It's 870 area code?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your name? First name and state?
Yeah.
Yep.
Doris?
First name and state.
Actually, it's D. Schmidt, and my state is Arkansas.
Okay.
And
so D from Arkansas.
Yes. I'm the first-time caller, and I got on the website and went into the civics course, and I started taking that, and then Ron called me and said, well, you need to do the introductory course first. And so I went through that, and then I got back into the civics course, and
you got through the civics course, okay, or you started the civics course.
Yeah, I went back to doing it, and I'm like halfway through, but I don't know what to do next. After
okay.
I finish that,
well,
take the government
look at
by
this.
Consent course.
The government by consent, the civics course is very important. It's a long course. It's mostly video and audio. Ask a few questions in the end, okay? And that course really lays out how it is that we the people, this nation, United States, got to where it is, okay? It really lays that out clearly. It also gives us a good perspective on what common law is, okay? So it helps us there. Mm-hmm. It gives us a good overview of our American history. And Michael Bodnarik does a pretty good introductory course to the Constitution. And he also gets into some in-depth studies and looks at some of the Bill of Rights and some of the other added rights. And so that's a really good course, and everyone should definitely take that course because we should understand how we got here. There's two other courses. One we just shut down, but some people are in it, and we'll let them complete what's in it, but no one can enter into it anymore, and that is the constitutional course. The reason being is because the government by consent course is going to overtake that course, and it'll be much more in-depth and much more detailed and much more tied into how it works in the law and how the law works, the difference between equity and law itself in the Constitution, which is called the law of the land. And so the next course that you really definitely everyone should take is the government by consent course. And what that'll do, it'll give you a really good picture view of the law, okay, the difference between law and equity, what equity is all about, the U.S. titles, it looks at the Constitution, and how many, you know, the different courts, how many different courts are out there. We try to keep it as simple as possible because we really don't get into the titles, of statutes, statutory law, but we give a general idea so people can understand what those statutes are about and who they apply to. And each one of those titles rests within a certain jurisdiction, okay? And that's why jurisdiction is important, okay? And for instance, if the federal government was, which before 1970, I don't think they even came out after people. As a matter of fact, they didn't have the ability, the U.S. Attorneys did not have the ability or any law or statutes in order to call a grand jury. I think it was 1970 is when they created some statutes to give them the authority. And then they put the penal law inside of USC 18. But USC 18, the jurisdiction is maritime law, And that's an important point to understand if you had to deal in a court that's coming out after you under USC 18 codes. So, you know, we don't get too involved in that, but we do give the general idea so people understand the dangers, and everything could be dealt with really on jurisdiction. Your battle is always jurisdiction.
Okay. So is there a book or something after I get through taking all of the courses? Is there
The consent, government by consent course, the government by consent course is based on a book, okay? Matter of fact, it's a book that's in writing right now. I'm writing that book, and I have, you know, a lot of chapters done. I got a lot of bits and pieces of certain chapters, so we're still putting it together. If you went into the course now, I forget, I'm not sure what chapter you can get up to, but you're going to get up to chapter, I don't know, 6 or 7. I really don't remember. If Jan's online, he can tell us. We'll have a couple more chapters up soon, and we'll have that finished off. Hopefully in the next month we'll have the whole course completed. When the course is completed, that course with additional stuff, not much, but some additional stuff and forms and different things, are going to be incorporated into a book, which we'll publish as soon as possible and get that out there for people to have a book. And the book will cover political and judicial. What it is all about is how do people consent to government. Were you here at the beginning of the call?
Yeah, I was on before that other lady got on that took an hour.
Okay,
so,
well, we were
anyhow,
talking about...
I listened.
Yeah.
I listened, but you went way around in circles, and I didn't... I'm a person that likes to go, yes, yes, yes. You know, mm-hmm. if I do this one, then I go this one, and then I go this one. And I have a friend that does this, too. She talks around and around and around, and I never can get to the point. So,
okay. Well, you see, here's the problem with that. And I do appreciate what you're saying. And, you know, it. And I have a problem with attention sometimes. And reading with books, I'm a very slow reader, and which turns out that it's a curse and a blessing at the same time, in my opinion. But so I'm a very slow reader. I find myself rereading things over and over again. But you see, the thing is once I reread it to a certain point, I understand that completely and move on to the next step. And that's the key to education. And I know with lectures, for instance, unless you're really up on the lingo and, you know, in other words, have a basic understanding of what the person is talking about, sometimes you kind of fall asleep here and there, or you miss a point. And even if you're awake, you miss a point because there's so much that you're really taking in. So the best way to do that, I know when I was listening to Bill Thornton, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he teaches
on
the common law.
Yeah, I'm on his course now.
He teaches on the common law, but he does have some major flaws. He's got great ideas and a lot of things. I've learned from that. We still use his course up there, but he's got a few faults in it, and probably, you know, I do, and like everyone else does anyway. But nevertheless, with that said, okay, what I found with Bill Thornton, I've listened to one of his lectures, and when I go back and listen again, I say, Don, I didn't hear that the first time. And because you kind of fall asleep, or you don't have enough of a, the lingo, the language, the terms, and understanding those things. So you have no real place to place them. And you're learning a lot of new stuff, so you miss a lot of stuff. So if you want, you can go back and, you know, that MP3 will be up online at the end of the night or tomorrow morning, and you can re-listen to that.
Yeah, that's what I...
But it's like a lecture.
I would like to get a copy of those CDs or whatever they are, so I can write down information as he's talking.
Right.
You know.
Right. We have
like
all that up on our webpage.
Make an outline of stuff.
we have all that up on our webpage. You can download all that stuff, and we've got
really?
All of his stuff.
On
got a
the
lot
courses?
Of everything we've. We've got all our stuff up there on the website and MP3s, you know, all of our meetings and everything. We go back for years.
I saw that, but all it has is just a list of MP3, you know, like...
It depends
date,
on what it is,
but
where.
I don't know what I'm looking for. I mean,
you'll find a folder. For instance, if you find a folder, for instance, up there, that has, let's say, Bill Thornton, because we're talking a little bit about him. So let's say you find Bill Thornton and you find his lectures, and we may have four different lectures. And each lecture may have, I don't know, 6, 8, 10, 12 MP3s in it, whatever it is. And now the MP3s may be numbered 1, 2, 3 and may not have titles, but the super title or the main title, it usually is listed underneath the main title. And then you just listen to it in order, 1, 2, 3, the way it should have been listened to. We have Bible studies up there also. We have a study in the book of Mark.
I have a master's in pastoral studies, so I don't need that.
Okay. Well, we all need that. So, good teachers, when you hear a good teacher speak on something and then you may hear another good teacher speak on the same subject, then they have different perspectives and you can see two different points of view and have double the knowledge. But in any event,
Wait. You know, you were saying that you have the MP3s on the website. I'm on the website, and where do I go to find
MP3? I don't remember where. You're going to have to fish around for it. Probably free courses. News, check. Education. Go under education, probably. Essays and lectures, if you come down to that. You can come down to free constitutional class. That, I think, is videos. We have trial by jury essay, that's MP3s. We've got common law lectures, that's probably where you'll find Bill Thornton and quite a few different, topical listings for that. We have American history lectures, I think there's about 20 of them up there. We have other essays and lectures. We have the, audio,
right.
Some of it is video.
Is there an index of all of the lectures?
Yeah, go to education, hit all the tabs and trace the tabs down. You'll find all kinds of stuff under education. You'll also find,
index, right, by, like, alphabetical order. If I wanted to know, like,
give me
the name of the circuit
court. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yes, no, there's not really other than, the tabs that open up. For instance, if you come down, you hit founding documents, you'll see the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, see biographies and the state constitutions there. So you'll trace them that way. But if you're looking for a page with an index refers to, I haven't had the time to create that, and our site is pretty massive. We got a lot of stuff up there, and I just don't have the time to sit down to try to create that. I don't know if anybody else could do that. If someone wants to volunteer to do that, and they think,
to volunteer to do it if I can get it, figure it out.
Right. Well, again, you poke around, just like learning to do Windows. You poke around before you know it, you're an expert in Windows. Just start with the welcome tab and work your way over. You know, we have also Reality Check, which has a lot of great stuff in there. We even get into the sciences. We talk about, medical problems, heart disease and cancer. We have a doctor up there that really talks about, illnesses, that all illnesses are caused by either toxins or deficiencies. And, there are certain exceptions to that, but generally speaking, cancer, diabetes, all that is either from toxins or deficiencies. Deficiencies in maybe certain minerals or supplements you might need, usually vitamins, which help to produce a lot of different supplements that you might take.
What do I do? After I get through
once you do all the courses, you go to the higher education, and that is an education of self-study by going to all of these different, tabs and work on things. I would say, once you would get through, this is my strong suggestion, and it's a little bit difficult reading, but you follow along, and the good thing about it, it's both in writing and in MP3, and that really helps. And so I would suggest anybody who finishes the course for consent of government, when they want to continue on, my suggestion is go next to the go to the Federalist Papers. And
where is that?
Over again.
Cut off. I'm sorry.
No, you're still here.
Okay.
You're still
here. Where is the Federalist Papers?
Federalist Papers should be under education. Come down to founding documents, and you'll see it there, the Federalist Papers. And you'll see the Anti-Federalist Papers underneath that.
Okay.
Now,
Federalist
also,
Papers and then Anti-Federalist Papers. And then
that's second
go
one,
into,
yeah.
after those two courses, go into higher education. Is that right?
Well, no. Those are not courses per se. It's the actual papers that you're going to read and listen to. Okay, and that's your higher education. Higher education, from my opinion, is self-education. That's what, in my opinion, higher education is. In other words, you want to become really, educated in particular areas and get deep down into the roots of things. But you start off. Everyone should really go through the free course, civics, and also government by consent, which we require people to be donators, $5 a month or more, to get into that course. And if they don't, if they can't have $5 because maybe they're very, very limited income, they can call Jan and we'll get you in anyway, because we want everyone to take that course. But that course, that's the bare minimum. My opinion, that is bare minimum. Every American should take those two courses and know the contents of all of those things and be able to basically defend themselves and understand how the court system works and what the purpose of lawyers really are for and so on and so forth. Now, beyond that, okay, is just we got books, we got biographies. Look, if you go to our books, you know, we got Locke, Spinoza, we got Newton, we got Hobbes. We also have the 5,000-year leap up here. Goodness, we also have, what was the other one we have? I forget what the other one is. But, again, go to lectures and essays. Again, there's so much stuff in there. We have the U.S. Marshall essay. We have articles and essays. And again, we have Bartnarek's free constitutional courses, and I think we have some other people who've done some constitutional courses, classes there, which I think those are videos, if I recall. We got the...
Okay. So there's no really suggested procedure on going, you know, 1, 2, 3.
After you get past the main courses that I mentioned, then it's a matter of reading. Look, books are the best way. Okay.
Right.
If you want to learn the Bible, read the Bible. That's the first place. The most important thing, in my opinion, is reading the Bible. Getting into studies are nice.
Yeah, done that.
You know? There's books that we refer people to. You'll find a list of books. One of the books, which is a landmark book, in my opinion, for understanding, really natural law, is Brent Winter's book, Excellence of the Common Law. Now, you can get his book by going to his website, which is commonlawyer.com, or you can just put his name, Brent Winters. I think in Amazon you'll find him, Excellence of the Common Law. So that's a great book if you really want to understand the history of the common law and really dig back deep. Again, reading is your real education. You know,
right.
when people go to college or some kind, you know, let's say basically college, unless they're pursuing becoming a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, but even with a lawyer's pretty, you don't need to go to school to become a lawyer. You can learn all these things on your own. But, become a medical doctor or a surgeon, of course, you're going to need to go into a structured educational class. But generally speaking, your education should be throughout your whole life, and these are the things, read books. And never leave a page without understanding it. That's the key. If you read the book and you leave pages without understanding it, you're hurting your own education. Because if you understand every page in that book as you go forward, you'll never forget it. And you'll find that this stuff, anybody who's, working, as a teacher, for instance, you find things spilling out of your mouth you didn't even remember that you remembered, you know?
Right,
why?
Right.
Because you understood what you were reading. And that's why I say, for me, I'm a very slow reader, and it's both a curse and a blessing. It's a curse because I have to go real slow with things, but it's a blessing because I usually don't forget what I'm reading. And not that I have, total recall. I don't have that. But generally speaking, I got the picture. I got the boundaries. I got the understanding. I read the next chapter. I got the basic understanding that chapter one gave me in order as a prerequisite to number two, maybe, and so on.
Okay.
Our website is an education.
Question. Yes, it is. I understand that I have another person in my county, and I need to get her name and phone number. I thought she was supposed to call me, but I guess she... missed the boat
or
something.
A couple of things you could
I don't know who it is.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you could do. Ron might be able to help you. If you go to our directory, you're looking for someone who's a – are they a county leader?
I don't know who it is.
Okay, because if you go to our
– member in our – in my county.
Oh, okay.
I live in Arkansas, and so we're kind of wasted away here.
Cool. You got Ron's phone number?
Yes.
Okay, get a hold of Ron. If Ron, I don't know whether Ron has the access into the list of all of our members, but Ron will get a hold of Jan if he doesn't, or you can get a hold of Jan and ask Jan for the names and phone numbers of any of the people in your county, and he'll get it for you. Now, Jan, you'll find under our directory, if you click on a directory, he's our national coordinator or leader. He should be coming up first. Let's see. National coordinator is Jan. You'll find his number here, and he's jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. And his phone number is 814-531-5362. You can give him a call, and he will try to connect you with other people in your neighborhood.
Okay. All right. Okay. One question kind of off the subject. Do you know Anna von Reitz?
We're familiar with Anna von Reitz.
Is she along the same lines as National Liberty Alliance?
No.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, God. Okay. yeah. And, all right, how do I become a committee man? Woman?
Well, a committee man or woman, and yeah. You can go up to, let's see, I think it's under education, and you come to political and start going through all the things there in the political. We have, the committee, you'll see committee man up there, had a petition. You can learn about Robert's Rules. You can, Washington's Farewell Address is up there. Really great paper to read and 3/4 of what he spoke about was concerning the committeemen, although most people wouldn't realize it unless they understand the committeemen and the process. We also have things that we've shared. I think you'll find it up here on this page or maybe in another place. I'm not sure what it is, where we have committees of safety. And our founding fathers started off with committees of safety, and when we became a nation, they morphed into the committeemen. So you can learn a lot there. And we will be really doing a heavy focus on that once we capture the courts, meaning we the people take back control of the courts and start placing administrators, the people across this nation. As we're doing that, we're going to really press heavily on teaching the committeeman process and help people to understand how to become an elected committeeman. And if you're not an elected committeeman, you have no power, no authority. You're just a name on a scroll that they use in order to run papers for them and get whoever they want into power, and you have no say on that. They allow you to think you have a say, but you don't. They play all kinds of games.
All right. So basically we're on our own until the government goes down?
Well, no. We've been on our own for a long time. And the government was headed down. But now I am absolutely convinced for many, many reasons, even biblical reasons, that, we're heading a different direction now. Trump is really kicking butt and taking down the deep state. Trials are going on. A lot of people don't know about that. But right now there are military tribunals happening out there in Guantanamo. And it started on January 2nd. And there's probably a lot of other cases that just aren't being advertised in the sense that's going on even in American courts here on the land that are not necessarily military tribunals. And so all of that's going down now, and there's going to be huge changes. I don't know nobody knows what the time schedule of these things is. It could take 2 years to get through the whole process. I think before Trump's first cycle is over, his first 4 years, I think we'll probably be at that point of really reconstructing America back to what it should be. So we have a year or two, maybe not even that, I don't know. We have to fill the void of power that's going to be created once the deep state is out of power, because the people must take control. And that's what we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance through the political process, the judicial process, which is the committee man and the juries. And so now is the time to educate and prepare for that. Get your name on the list to take a position if you want to be an administrator for the juries. And we'll also show people that want to become committee men and help them out so that you don't run against other people that are good. You'll be taught as a committee man, at least they do in New York, that you can run anywhere within your assembly district. Okay, and that's not true. Committee men can only run within their town, and they have to run within any of the election districts within their town. If there's a good person in your election district that you don't want to run against that person, you want to get in there and help and work with that person, so you go to the next election district next door, which is only turning right on this street or turning left on that street, you know. I mean, right in my little neighborhood here in an area of maybe 12 streets or so are two election districts, and I can run in either one of them. It's in this town, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the key.
Okay.
And we'll teach all that when it's necessary. Hopefully by the next election system runoff to the primaries, maybe we'll focus in. But we really can't get away from fighting the courts first. We have to deal with the court problems first.
Okay.
Because we did start
with
the political.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening and answering my questions and patronizing me. I look forward to the next call.
Okay, thank you. All right,
let's take
our next caller. Thank you for the call. Next caller, let's see who that is. You know what? I may have to log out to come in. Terry, can you hit the next caller? Because my board froze up. Was Jan here? Someone hit the next caller. I'm going to log out of my board and try to come back in.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Daniel from Utah.
How you doing, Daniel?
You were talking earlier about the lawsuit for the judicial...
against
judiciary.
The judiciary, yes.
Yes. It seems to me that the 11th Amendment is kind of where all this foreign corporation judicial system came in. I think that's where the power originates.
You think it from the 11th? Okay.
Yeah, because that changes Article 3, talking about the judicial powers of the common law in the Constitution. And then it's starting to transfer it's basically allowing a foreign judicial power to come in and replace the common law in the judicial system.
Hmm.
And so I think...
Well, I don't know that I could read it that way. Let me read this. This is the 11th Amendment. The judicial power of the United States shall be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity, and that's the law of the land.
But it says it shall not, right?
Huh?
It shall not be construed?
Yeah. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state or by citizens or subject of any foreign state. Now, I may want to, if Brent is here, I think he's done a lot more research on that particular, because I haven't looked too much after the 10th Amendment, because I don't trust any of them after the 10th, to be honest. But I find fault in most of them. I've never scrutinized the 11th Amendment, at least not yet. I will be. I'm working on that. Brent, are you still here? Is Brent still here? I think he's gone. Yeah, Brent would have much. If you come back next week and try to get in early into the queue, you know, we'll pull Brent up to answer that question.
Yeah, yeah. So that does change a section of Article 3, though, which is clearly judicial jurisdiction.
No. It's it's dealing in, from the way I read it here and looking at it, and again, I haven't broken it down word by word very carefully, and that's what needs to be done. Because this little book called the Constitution and this little book called the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence is so small, yet it just says so much. But it says here, concerning the United States by citizens or another state or by citizens subject of any foreign state. So I think what they're trying to do is saying that, you know, you can't sue, you don't come to the federal courts to sue a citizen from one state to another, I think. Let me see. Let me read it again. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state or by citizens or subject of any foreign states. So again, I'd have to meditate on that a little bit and
But it is definitely,
let me just finish this one point, because when you really get stuck and you can't get anywhere with it, okay, then you really want to look deep into the Federalist Papers, because that's where you'll find your solution usually. Now, remember, the Federalist Papers did not deal with the Constitution in itself. I mean, the Anti-Federalist Papers dealt with the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers dealt with the Constitution. And that's how we have the two. And I think it was three states refused to sign unless they agreed that they'd come up with a Bill of Rights. And 2 years later, I think it was after, 1789, the Constitution was executed. And I think it was 91, maybe 92, when the Bill of Rights came into play. Let me see if I have a date here real quick.
91.
Is it 91? Thank you. So it's 91,
yes,
2 years later. So
and Britain is on, but I don't hear him.
Okay.
A comment on this is that what it's saying there is directly the opposite of what it says in Article 3, Section 2.
It's identifying with cases concerning citizens of one state against a citizen of another state. That's what it's
but
identifying.
But that should all come under the judicial powers of the
common
law.
No, I think they're trying to push it out into the state courts. I think that's what they're trying to do with this amendment. Because it made the federal courts too busy, I think. Now, again,
but the judicial powers includes judicial powers at all levels, though.
Yeah, but what I'm trying
under
to say
that
is,
Article 3.
I think what they're trying to do here is say that you can't bring cases. In other words, the Constitution, I believe, the Constitution created that the federal courts would have the jurisdiction when one citizen sues another citizen from another state, okay? And I think they backed out of that with this. I think that's what's being said. Now, again, I don't want to take it any further than that, because I haven't studied this enough, and I really got to kind of meditate on it and scrutinize it and, you know, research. I know that Brent has done tremendous amounts of work in these things, and he has already scrutinized it, and I would trust the if you listen to his explaining the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and he lays things out, it's very obvious that he's on point. Occasionally he's in error, I'm sure, but we'll route him out. But in any event, talk to him about it, you know.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, appreciate the question. Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Let's see. Next caller is 301 phone number. The area code.
Hello?
Yeah, how you doing? First name and state.
It's Valerie, and I'm from Maryland.
Valerie from Maryland. Go ahead, Valerie.
Yeah. I have so much to tell you. Well, one was I was talking to some people that, you know, that indictment that you did with Hillary and Harry Reid and all that.
Right,
that's
I remember. Yep.
Yeah, circulating around again. And you've got some people passing it, and then you've got a couple of live streamers that were saying, it's fake, and I'm arguing with them saying it's not fake. And then I was attacked by a couple of people, and I'm arguing with them. It's real. And, you know, I'm trying to get them
well,
to come on.
You know, you're not going to change, you know, you can lead a horse to water, you're not going to be able to drink it. I used to try to convince people, you know, especially when I was a young Christian, I was preaching the gospel and I trying to convince people, and I realized the Bible's telling me I'm not going to convince anybody of anything. So you just spread it out there, and whoever responds, responds. And some people eventually will come around. You'll sprinkle, you know, you'll throw a few seeds here, and someone else will come by and put a little water on it, and so another person will come by and put more water on it, and before you know it, blossoms. And hopefully that's what's going to happen, unless it's, you know, rocky grounds or something. But and that's a biblical principle. You can apply that to this. Here's the thing you could do. If you have people that claim to be serious, okay, people with a platform, a mic, maybe YouTube, and they've got a following, and they're claiming to be serious, you got this one thing you want to make the point to them. Look, you're claiming this isn't true. I'm telling you it is. And here's what you can do if you're really serious to find out the truth and get to the bottom line of this. Go to nationalliberty.org, and you can find, and you can click on, you can find these papers up there. But also, hang on a minute, got the noise coming in. Okay, you can, you tell them you can find this information up there, but you can also talk to the people who put this together on Monday nights at National Liberty Alliance. Come to the Monday night meeting, and you'll meet the people that were actually on this particular grand jury. And you could talk to them about it, and you can ask them questions. You could bring up issues of what oppositions other people have brought up, and we can answer those questions. So if they're serious about getting to the bottom of the truth, send them here on a Monday night.
I did all of that. I spent a long time.
You're not
and I
interested.
Had, yeah, I know. That's what really bothers me. Because
yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah. It really is. And then they had, finally, I did get through to them. You know, because they're, I don't know, maybe their head is too big or whatever, but they're like, well, we did research and we were looking into it and it was dismissed. And I said, well, yeah, that judge was in, you indicted that judge, right?
We indicted that judge and we've corrected that judge. We've overturned the ruling of that judge. We filed the papers in the court. They still sit. We still file papers. As a matter of fact, we'll be filing papers very soon, two more papers into that court. They do not send them back. We also indicted one of the clerks of that court up there for sending papers back, and we sent. Now they do not return any of our papers, which means it's going into the file. Now if they're holding it and hiding it, hey, and especially if they're doing that with the judge, that's 20 years in jail for them under their own statutory law, the titles, and so we'll hold them to that maybe. Look, we're going to get resistance. We're going to get rejection. We're going to be doing another case. It's going to be a different file number, but we still are filing papers in this court case, and they still are accepting them, and they're not returning them.
Well, that's good.
But we're fighting the bureaucracy. We're fighting those who want to maintain the status quo, you know, and this is what we're up against. But as far as people, look, there's a biblical principle. And again, I find biblical principles apply in life in many ways. But, you know, if they don't, when you come and you bring the good news or the truth, whatever you want to say, in this case, it's the truth. Good news is the gospel, but it's the truth. We're bringing truth. And people are not receiving it. You know, go into their house, give them the truth. They don't receive it. Shake the dust off your feet as you leave and move on. You know, you're not going to make a horse drink the water. You know, it's just not going to happen. And that happens
now,
in our own families, too.
Yeah. One of the conclusions they came to, too, when I finally did get them to accept that it was real, even though they thought it was pointless because that they thought the courts were not accepting it and it was thrown out.
Yeah, but
someone else
had... What they're doing is they're giving the authority of the people to a political animal, namely a judge, as if the judge can overrule the people. And they think that a judge can overrule the people. A judge can never overrule the people per se. You know, of course, there's an exception to every rule. For instance, of course, the United States Supreme Court can only interfere in a case decided by a tribunal, meaning the jury. Okay, they cannot overturn a case. The only thing they can respond to is if someone's unalienable rights was injured in some way in that case, they can come and correct that. And it's their duty to do that. But they cannot overturn the decision of a court of record, in other words, the tribunal, the people in a jury. So I've heard of cases where judges have overturned cases or they went to retrial. All of that is unlawful. It's not part of our system. And again, they'll continue to make it worse and abuse us and bring more things into law that is not law. And they're going to continue to do that and be destructive until we, the people, step up and take control and put them back under the Constitution, tie them down with the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson says.
Now, I told them pretty much that, but not in the same eloquent way that you do. But and I really got a lot of flack, let me tell you. I probably made
what
a lot.
What place is this?
Well, it's on. I'm on a lot of different groups, but on Discord we have some groups, and I'm in a couple of them. I'm in a lot of them, but two of them, well, three of them are like sister groups, and out of one of those groups, we do live streams, and there's researchers, per se, that don't really, I think that they think once they've looked things up that that's it. Sometimes
right.
It is, and sometimes it's not. And they really didn't take my advice and come on here and listen. And they ask me questions, and then I don't know all
the answers. How many listeners come into that particular group? Is it a small group?
Well, it's a lot.
One of our moderators here is heavily involved in that. Terry, do you want to maybe exchange information with Valerie? Valerie, right?
Sure.
Okay. And
can you hear me all right?
Want to get together on things because, you know, we're looking to go on to that program. Terry's going to bring us into that program. But go ahead, Terry.
I'm trying. The NLA workroom is what I have. I'd like to get the other stuff. I am QSMX Pilot 5799. If you can send me a link, I'll try and be friends, and I'll give you a link into the NLA workroom, and we can go from there. And I can maybe look at your other ones.
I have to write that down. But in the meantime,
yeah, can you repeat that again slowly, Terry?
I got to write. I got to get it down.
All right. Well, if not, you got the audio. You can download the audio later and get the.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Valerie, hold on a second. Terry, don't you have an email address, an NLA email address?
Yes,
Terry,
I do.
So you can reach Terry, you can reach her at Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay.
And then you guys can talk because I think, you know, you're on the same program, and I'm going to be going on that soon. With one of the other co-founders of National
League. And you should be able to, because I get automatic emails from you guys since I'm a member. So, and I get emails from Jan. Now, they were worried about what if it actually goes through, because they're saying, well, the courts aren't recognizing the common law and the Constitution, so it's not going to go through. And
so the question to them is, are you happy with that they destroyed the law? Are you good with that, or what are you going to do?
No, I'm not happy with it at all, and I don't know how to answer.
No, but you should ask them, are they happy with the fact that they got rid of the rule of law in the United States, and you're not doing anything about it? That's what we're doing. That's why we're filing papers. And you know what? Here's the other key thing to this. These papers may not take effect or have any clout at this moment in time, but they are part of history, and they will have some validity and some power and some authority at some point in time. And some of these people, of course, may have already been brought to justice, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be through us. But there's a lot of other paperwork that we've put through. A lot of other things we're changing, like the non-judicial foreclosures, the non-tax foreclosures, non-judicial tax foreclosures, people being arrested and brought into, you know, put in jail and being held without due process. That is a big problem across America. And we need to do something, and only the common law can fix that. Only the common law.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're worried about double jeopardy, too. Like, if it goes in and they're, you know, not prosecuted, like
they don't understand. Double jeopardy is when you've been tried two times. You can't be tried a second time. You can be indicted numerous times.
Yeah. But when it goes to the courts, who would be handling it?
We were sending all of our paperwork to Jeff Sessions in order to get some U.S. attorneys to work with us. That never went anywhere, but I think they didn't have a choice to take it anywhere. And that's okay. They're aware of us, and we continue to send papers. We haven't sent anything since Jeff Sessions has left to the Justice Department. But we also send papers often to the president, and also to we're doing an information to the Senate, and we're going to copy all of the branches. We'll copy the other legislative branch. We'll copy the U.S. Supreme Court and also the president on that particular issue that we're getting ready to file shortly, which is on the problem with the Senate vote. You know, that they want 60 votes by rule, but by law, it's 50 plus votes, okay? If it's 50-50, the vice president makes the final decision, and that's the rule of the Senate, and that's the way the Constitution says it, and that's the law. Now, there is a place where they have to have three quarters for a certain thing or that, you know, three-fourths of a vote. In this case, it's three-fifths of a vote, which is what 60 votes is to 100, to 40. So that would be three-fifths. Well, the Constitution, the law does not, you know, offer that. And to change that is power and authority. They don't have power or authority to give themselves more power or authority or change power or authority. You see, that's the key.
Okay. And I have two more little things. One is the committee men. I was speaking with them, and one of the guys said he was a committee man, and I think it's Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, you know, you have the power as a committeeman. It's a pretty powerful position. And he didn't really understand that.
No.
And he asked me to ask, is it a precinct committeeman? And I'm like, I don't really know. So I'm asking.
Well, it's all the same thing. Some of them call precincts, election districts. It doesn't matter on the language that they use. But a precinct committee man is the same thing as an election district committee man or just a committee man. The proper title is committee man, and it's identified by a particular election district on that paper, so you can call it a precinct committee man. Now, most committee men have no clue on how it really works, or precinct committee man, whatever they want to call themselves. They have no idea how things work. They're in there because maybe a friend or someone brought them in. They got him a little excited. They're getting him into the political game. They start to play, and some people develop with the process and gets involved with the criminal aspects of it, you know, because most of it is crime, the political favors and all kinds of deals going on. I mean, for instance, if you're in a little town or an area where maybe, let's say, they need a certain permit or something to tow vehicles, and someone in town is politically connected and they're a committee man and they're playing the game and, you know, serving the status quo, so to speak, there's a good chance they'll end up as a payment to get that contract because they're in the business of towing. These kind of things is what's going on the level of the committee man. We have to stay away from that. There are no favors. There are no political favors. I don't get a better deal or in a bid situation or a contract or something because I'm a committee man and I'm playing ball. You see, that's a crime. And we got to get rid of all that stuff. And that's plaguing the committee man thing. The other thing is a lot of these committee men think that they're getting a vote, but you'll often find most of the votes are counted in secret, so you really don't know what the count of the votes really are to begin with. Also, they come in with... what do they call them? Someone will bring in 30 or 40 votes of other people that didn't show up, you know. I forget what they call that. And it'll tip the scale if it's done if it's done publicly by raising of the hands. But anything
now
important or anything. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Am I correct in the, the powers that a committee man has, the people who are running in your area have to kind of go through you, and if you call them, they will get back to you because they know they have to get through you. Is that correct?
You mean the people? I'm not sure I understood the question. It could be understood.
With the committeeman's
power.
Are you
talking about someone who is running for office or in office? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Ask the question again.
When you're trying to explain to someone how powerful the position, how important it is for you as a committeeman for our Constitution and to get the right people in, what exactly makes them so powerful?
Well, it's the unalienable right of we the people to make sure that the people that get onto the ballot are people who know and understand the Constitution and are going to be statesmen and not politicians, so to speak. And that's how I would lay that out. But here's the thing. And it's not going to take a lot to take control of the nation in the committee man process. Let me explain something. The way things are working here in this state and in all the states around us, you know, Jersey, Pennsylvania, and other places, and probably all the states or most of the states, is that there's appointments, favors that take place in appointments. Even though they may look as if they ran in some kind of a political race, or they did the petitions and one got more than the other, and even though it looks right, it's not. There's a game being played, and it's played by words. And so these people are not elected. They just think they're elected in some cases. Some people don't even know that they're elected or they should be elected. But once they get in, once you get someone that's in there, if you are an elected individual, okay, if you're an elected committeeman, and there are positions that need to be filled that have not been filled, okay, you can appoint people. The chairman can appoint people to fill those seats until the next election, okay? There are two questions here. Are you going to fulfill my will, or are you going to fulfill the will of the seat that you're taking, you know, of the people that you're representing? And, of course, as a chairman, if I was a chairman, I would want them to, you know, obey the people of their election district and represent them and not me. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works in the corrupt system that's set up. But here's the other key thing. Let's take all of New York State, and I forget how many numbers there are. Let me think about this real quickly. Let me just run a number or two. Let's say three times 62, I think it is. Okay, yeah, it's about 18,000. There are approximately 18,000 committeemen or positions of committeemen here in New York State in each party. And by the way, it should be one singular party, but in any event, in each party. And if you take that and let's say none of them are elected, which they aren't, okay, there may be a few still elected committeemen in New York because we've taught people how to do it and they're still struggling. Let's say I ran and became an elected committeeman, and the other 18,599 positions were filled by people who are not elected. Well, I could take control of the entire process because I'm the only elected committeeman. And in the way the rules and everything work out, I can kick everybody out of their seats and replace them, or I can train them and teach them the proper way and process. Of course, that's the way you want to go. And you get rid of all the problematic people that are just corrupting the system. You can just get rid of those, which is usually the leadership. Because right now, every county is controlled by five individuals in my state and probably your state, too. There's the committee chair, the co-chair, the secretary, the treasurer, and it may be another position, maybe four or five positions. Four or five people make the decisions on the entire process, okay? And that would be per county, and then they do it on a state level also, same thing. Five people will decide the whole process, and the people within the counties below them will obey that, the ones that are playing ball with the corruption, as I'm talking about. And the whole thing is just nothing but corruption, and it's just set up.
And the
anyway,
important
we're coming
thing
to
is
the end here. But go ahead.
That committeeman has to know the Constitution and how to be a committeeman according to the Constitution.
Well, sure, because that committeeman is going to take, or woman, but committeeman, is going to take an oath to the Constitution. Okay?
Right.
And if they don't know the Constitution, how to apply the Constitution, then they lied, didn't they?
Right.
You know, if they don't know the Constitution, how can you honor and obey it? How can you support it?
Exactly.
You know? And that's the same thing problem with all of our elected officials. You know, they've
right.
taken that oath. They've lied. You know, I brought that up to a sheriff on numerous occasions, sheriffs, and, you know, did you lie on when you did that? Because you don't know the law. You don't know the Constitution. You know?
I talked to my
talk to lawyers.
Sheriff.
Well, then maybe they should have been the sheriff.
Yeah, I talked to my
for them. You know?
And I wanted to find out if he had a handbook, and he said he did, and everybody that works for him has a handbook, and he thinks he got it from you, but he's not sure.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah, those were the we got new handbooks, but we still are working on trying to get enough money to get enough out into the mail to all of the sheriffs, but we're still working on that.
And last but not least, a while back, I was telling you about the Census Bureau and how they were harassing me to answer questions. And somebody mm-hmm. said to me the other day that it's in the Constitution,
yes.
that it's constitutional to answer, yes. like, the Census. And he showed, like, Article 1,
right.
Section 2. Is that
right.
an amended Constitution,
no.
though?
No, that's part of the Constitution. The original founders put that in there. The census is important. I used to shy away from it, too, for numerous reasons. There's a lot of confusion out there, you know, and I'm sucked into all of it just as much as anyone else. I've just been digging my way out and clawing at the top of the pit to get totally out of it, you know. So we get confused, and we think we got to do this, or we think this is right, or this is wrong. And if you notice, anybody that has been following National Liberty Alliance, from time to time, we find ourselves in error. We make that correction. We don't have to be right. We want to be right. But if you have an error, you got to correct that error. Otherwise, you're not doing anybody any good. But, goodness, I lost my train of thought on that. In any event.
It's okay.
In the census, okay, I used to always shy away and not talk to these people. But now if they came knocking on my door, I would, okay, because it's in the Constitution and monies are, there's a thing with the taxes and everything that works out with that and having certain monies for according to the populations and however all that works. I'm not educated in that area. But it has a purpose, and so we should participate. I didn't participate mostly from fear of giving information on me and who I am because the government is evil, and I believed at some point they're going to take me out because I'm a problem to them. But now we're past that point with Trump and everything that's going on. My fears of that is much less.
Okay.
Okay,
well.
We're
way
past our time. Appreciate the call. There's still people in the queue. Sorry. Try to get in early next week. We'll get you into the queue early, and we'll take it from there. So anyway, thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. And again, please don't forget we have a special meeting. It's a meeting of the entire NLA, on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room, for the sole purpose of really starting to push things along, to get organized a little more better, reactivate people who have fallen asleep, and preparing to take control. that is we the people on the grassroots level across the entire United States. And so everyone should try to make that meeting. And if you can't, it will be posted, the MP3, and you can listen to it later and hopefully jump in and participate. Only the people can save America. Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.